We scanned your consciousness. You're part of the moon now.
No freaking way! So... we saved the Earth.
Yours.
We should get started.
Get started with what?
Hey everybody, welcome to Yours, Mine, and Theirs, the fourth greatest movie podcast available. The podcast where we watch three movies from a narrowly defined genre that you choose, and you guys get to pick one of the movies. So we'll be shown later the beauty and perils of democracy wrapped up in one. Wo jiao fei er jie, wo de ming zi shi fei er jie, dang shan fan a, wei xia shi, wo xing dao you ren shuo, hey, shi bai zhe, ni gang gang ying la.
Oh. I thought this was a PG podcast. You settled down, sir.
Did you say your name in that?
I did.
Okay.
I'm Roy, by the way. Sorry.
Oh. Hi, I'm John, and I kidnapped these two other hillbillies to join me on this podcast. Or did they kidnap me?
Oh.
My name is Marco, and I'm here because I'm moonfalling in love. You know, I screwed that up.
I think it works.
I'm in the moon for podcast love that provides some smiles.
I don't know, oh, no, that's that. Okay. No, that's pretty good. That's right. Way better than the gibberish Roy said. are you going to reveal what that is? Or
sure.
Is that going to be like an outtake at the end or something? Do we have to wait at the end?
I said, I'm Roy Fillmore. And when Savannah smiles, I hear someone say, hey, loser, you just won.
Oh, that's Ooh. Cute. That's yeah. sort of cute.
Sort of cute. Hey, so you may have already have guessed, or yeah, if you're following the Facebook page, you already know, but we are watching three movies that Mark has never seen before. That's the shtick. And then in 2 weeks, he's got to come back for his community service. But Mark chose, using democracy, we ended up watching Savannah Smiles. So that was fascinating because I've been trying to find an excuse to watch this movie for the last 3 years, and it just came out of nowhere. But then Mark chose In the Mood for Love and Moonfall, hasn't seen any of these movies until now. So what an eclectic set of films.
You know, I didn't hear of Moonfall until 2 weeks ago. Like, was it in theaters and stuff?
I think I saw a trailer for it.
That's funny because it's a big Roland Emmerich movie.
Oh, man. I mean, what's the budget? Because it looks like the budget was extensive.
Yeah,
I could be
insane,
wrong. Only $150 million.
$150 million. But I mean, it looks really big, but also it looks really cheap. Big. I mean, it looks
well. So far, they've made back a third of what they spent. So you know, good for them. I'm imagining the overseas market, they'll probably be okay. What do you think?
It's not going to play well on the moon.
I don't
look for the moon. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's why isn't China kind of not going to movies right now?
Well, what was the movie that they refused to show because we wouldn't change it? Was it the Spider-Man movie because they refused to show a movie that features the Statue of Liberty? Like, that was legit why they wouldn't show
that.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, they insisted that Disney and Marvel, like, edit out the Statue of Liberty from that movie, which is impossible because that's, like, the last third of the film. Takes place at the Statue of Liberty. Spoilers.
So they haven't shown it at all?
They haven't shown it at all in China.
Oh my
Isn't
God.
That a weird reason?
Out.
It's like us refusing to watch a movie that takes place at the Great Wall of China. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like we were showcasing Taiwan or something. It's just the Statue of Liberty.
Well, I was thinking if Moonfall is like a recent release, like, because isn't China under like seriously heavy lockdown, or is it just some parts
That's
of
true.
China that are in lockdown?
It's just some parts. I don't think it's the entirety of China.
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, I just they're taking it more seriously than I mean. That's kind of funny. When we talk about the terrors of democracy, I think this is what we're talking about. Like living in an authoritarian society, they're like, no, the disease is winning. Everybody stay inside, and we can make you. In the meantime, in the West, we're like, okay, fine, let the disease win. We're all out. We're done.
We're tapping out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of shaking the disease, Fletch died today.
Oh, gosh, no, I can't believe it. Yeah. Mark, you heard that? That's just...
That bums me the hell out.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I thought you didn't even like Depeche Mode.
Ray Liotta passed away.
Hmm? Yeah, and Ray Liotta, yeah.
Ray Liotta and Andrew Fletcher died today. Andrew Fletch. Fletcher. Yeah, that's just... Yeah, I don't know. Is this bad that we're recording on a death day?
Well, we shall see.
Well, we're watching Savannah Smiles. This
will be the worst podcast ever.
Yeah.
So I think we'll pull through because even though today's been rough, John, I swear I hear someone say, "Hey, loser, you just won."
Oh, my God. You know, for the life of me, I can't understand why you wanted to review this movie so bad.
Oh, my goodness. So, I mean, it's been 30 years since I've seen it. We'll talk about it. I guess we'll talk about it pretty soon. Unless you guys have anything else you want to talk about. I mean, in the meantime, if you haven't already listened to it, we've made the big decision for our live podcast.
We should mention this.
Yeah, Andy's coming to it. Is he going to drag you along, Mark, or are you stuck in because of vacations or library indentured servitudeness?
It's a bit of both. Right now, like, I'm one of only two librarians, and I'm already going to take vacation to go to the Ted Cruz destination of choice. Mm-hmm. I'm going in a couple weeks, so that's going to be fun.
Oh, good
but
for
yeah,
you.
But yeah, I'm not going to be able to make it. I really want to be there because it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, John said apparently we're doing it next year for Halloween, and I don't...
So, I said in 2024.
Oh, 2024. So, okay, yeah, we got some time.
Such a long time, y'all.
That's just something I said on a whim. So, I don't know. We could do it at the end of this year for Halloween if everybody wants to.
That'd be nice.
So, my leave as a civilian, my paid time off as a civilian, has come as a real shock. So, by the time I leave Utah on July 5th, I will be out of paid time off for much of the rest of the year. But, so I'm not coming out for Halloween to do a live event. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But by 2024, I should be able to do so.
Okay. Well, actually, this is not. We haven't even seen how well this is going to go.
Yeah, it might be July 1st.
If it's a disaster, then you know, then the Halloween thing is probably going to be just at a park somewhere. But if it's successful, then maybe we'll plan the Halloween thing for 2024 and just seriously plan on it.
Yeah,
I mean, you are going to have to go into our territory for Halloween. Like, you just have to.
Yeah, it's just touchy because I got parents.
Texas, you mean?
I got parents that want to support me, so I don't. I guess I could try to kindly tell them that they'd rather. Maybe you want to sit this one out, but
at least for Halloween.
Yeah. Also, I mean, who knows? In 2 years, my parents are old, so you know. So who knows?
Oh anyway. My God.
Yeah. All right. Well. But no, let's talk about it. So we're detective movies, right? And what do we pick? We're watching Vertigo and
on
Clue.
July 1st.
Nice. Yeah, nice. And The Fugitive. And I think those are really great choices.
It's going to be – I've been thinking about how – I'm anticipating it a lot. I get a little bit more excited every time we talk about it. I'm like, oh, it's just the perfect – types of movies to just watch over a day, you know?
Yeah.
And it was good idea choice. Of yours, Roy, to just kind of to make sure it's like, okay, let's spread out like the genres, like make sure we get kind of a classic old one and make sure we get a comedy in there and then make sure we kind of get a blockbuster sort of modern. And, you know, and I think so. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out the lady's not emailing me back about like
Nibs.
About Nibs and about recording, like the best way to get the recording done. So if nothing else, I'm going to set up an iPhone to just record next to the speaker in the room, just the microphone speaker. It's just like, okay, this is just going to be – that's definitely going to be the backup anyway. But if nothing else, that's how we're going to do the recording.
That's funny. So it's interesting because, you know, we're looking forward to The Fugitive as our main event, but I think that it's going to be so much fun to watch Clue. I think that's going to be a riot.
That's going to be a blast.
Yeah. That's a good theater movie, I think, yeah.
It's a great theater movie, yeah.
So is The Fugitive. All three movies are great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we never talk about it, but apparently Vertigo is the best movie. People say it's the best movie.
Of all time?
Yeah, beat Citizen Kane, like in the polls.
Really?
You know, for a while, Citizen Kane, you know, which is not saying much because it's like, it's, you know, it's the Rotten Tomatoes thing. Like, Citizen Kane is not anybody's favorite movie, but it's just the one everybody agrees on is a great movie. And it's the same thing with Vertigo. You always got to distrust, you know, whenever it's like, because the greatest movie is like not everyone's favorite movie. Unless you're James and Autumn freshman year, because they were arguing with me that Citizen Kane was way better than Lost Boys. I'm like, yeah, it is better, but don't be that freshman person in college who just goes around touting how great Citizen Kane is, because it's just Autumn. That's auto pretension that you don't need yet.
Well, and like, you're sitting down in front of your TV and Citizen Kane and Lost Boys both come on at the same time. Which one are you going to watch?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's not even close. Yeah.
So I think we've decided right now that we're watching Lost Boys instead of Vertigo.
If Vertigo had a shirtless saxophone player in mid-scene somewhere, like, we'd watch Vertigo. Definitely. But you know what? I think I'm just such a contrarian because I have no real love for Citizen Kane. I don't understand everybody's obsession with it. It's just not for me, man.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I really like Citizen Kane. I think it's great. I mean, you know, but it's not like on my shelf, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
It's kind of like the Goonies in a way. Like, we all had to decide this is everybody's favorite 80s movie. And I sound like I'm disparaging it. I'm not. I think it's Citizen Kane gets a bad rap because we had to pick some movie, you know? And so it's just always going to fall short of expectations.
Godfather 2 is better than Citizen Kane.
Casablanca.
Casablanca is better than Citizen Kane. Vertigo is better than Citizen Kane. Like,
well, yeah. I think the reason Citizen Kane is up there just because it was like the Avatar of its time. Because it did so many things that hadn't been done in a movie, you know, camera wise and stuff like that.
I guess.
But so, like, do you ever find yourself in that mood where you're like, I would die to watch Citizen Kane right now. I just want to get some popcorn, turn down the lights, and it's Citizen Kane time.
Right. I think I would have if I pursued. If I pursued like journalism, like I started doing in college.
Nah, you know what I think it is? I think Citizen Kane is a lot like Radiohead's OK Computer, where pretentious jerks want to say that this is the greatest thing ever, and they're trying to convince you that you're dumb for not liking it.
So I read a wonderful review for OK Computer that said, it's brilliant, but it's no fun.
Yeah, I so agree with that.
But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I feel like the best, and I'm doing a lousy job defending Citizen Kane, but I don't trust anybody who says it's their favorite movie because it comes with the burden of already existing as the top movie, you know, for like 50 years. Just like we had to pick a top movie, so we picked the top movie. So anybody who says like it's their favorite movie, I don't trust them so much because I kind of feel like, okay, you know what? Everybody picked this as their favorite movie because we had to pick one. But you don't show me any originality or individual thought by picking this as your favorite movie.
Yeah,
jerk. So that's just kind of how I think about it.
You know what would have been the top movie these last 20 years if there had been enough reviews? I mean, there's only one review. That was the problem. But it's Savannah Smiles.
There's one review of Savannah Smiles.
There's one review.
there's going to be a second one, and it's not going to be so kind.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. And I said this last time, I had never seen Savannah Smiles. I have heard the title, but I had never seen it until a couple weeks ago.
Did Katie point all the spots up in the wilderness out to you?
It was eye-opening. That was the most interesting thing about it. And Mark, I'm sorry, but I mean, you've never been here, I don't think.
I've been to Salt Lake, but I've never been to Provo.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Well, and people keep saying Provo, but I mean, everything is marked Salt Lake City Police. There's some stuff in Provo Canyon. There's some stuff up the canyons in Salt Lake City.
Right. That's the thing. It's all the canyon stuff. It's all the hippy dippy hiking areas and stuff. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, it's like, that is, what is that? That's secret. Oh, that's the Silver Lake. Up by, where is it? Snowbird or
Big Cottonwood Canyon, Alta. Right?
Yeah. Up there. Yeah. So it's like, oh, okay. Those things are fun to recognize. And, of course, Bridal Veil Falls is up Provo Canyon. So if you go into Parks, you know, if you take the drive to Park City from Provo, you'll pass Bridal Veil Falls, and it's always just this fun. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's like, oh, we're passing the falls, you know, and you always get to do that.
Well,
so
we're kind of talking about it. we should just dive in, and I do want to say though that this movie was outside of Mark's control because he allowed a poll, and this one got suggested, and this was a really lopsided vote.
Yeah. Everybody wanted to talk about Sebastian.
Really
everybody
surprised me.
But I mean, because everybody in our Yours, Mine, and Their circle is – it's generally circles out from
– Timpview High School.
Timpview High School, right, in Provo. And so – and this is like a 1982 movie. And so when we were all 10 years old, not me apparently – apparently, my mom had some sense. She didn't make me watch the Sebastian. But yeah, it's just like, okay, when we were 10 years old in like in the late 80s, early 90s, it was just the VHS that we felt safe and almost locally patriotic to own. Our parents did anyway, right? And so that's why.
I was going to ask, like, yeah. Was this a rite of passage? Is this like,
I don't know.
You got a CTR ring and then a VHS copy of Savannah Smile?
I don't know.
Is this what was happening? I don't understand it.
Something like that. A little bit.
So this movie made $10 million. I don't know how much it cost, and there's no way it cost $10 million.
If it is a rite of passage, then I'm glad to say I've finally become a man in the past couple weeks.
That's right.
This rite of passage of watching Savannah Smiles.
Yeah. You're a Utah man.
Yeah.
You're a Utonian now.
Might as well know.
On IMDb, this is a 7.0, which is a pretty good score. Rotten Tomatoes, we already alluded to this. One review, 50%.
Even that one person's like, I don't know about
this. The one person is like, I don't know why I'm reviewing this.
So the review basically said, well, it's harmless enough for kids.
Oh, that's hilarious. You know what? When I went into IMDb and I'm checking out the people who are in this movie.
Oh, man.
I was thinking like, oh, this is going to be pretty cool because Michael Parks is in it. Peter freaking Graves.
Yeah.
Pat Morita. I mean, come on. Even Fran Ryan is there. Like, I know all these actors. And I was like, okay, this is going to be cool. Like, I've never heard of this movie. And, you know, the people from Yours, Mine, and Theirs will never lead me astray.
So it was off-season migrant labor for all of them. Yeah.
So Pat Morita, though, like, I was checking out his filmography. And in the 70s, he was on every major television show. He was everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, he did the what I call the golden triangle of 70s television. He did The Love Boat, Fantasy Island, and Columbo. But he was all over the place.
He was in MASH.
He was in MASH. He was also in MASH. Yeah.
And then he spent time on Happy Days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He was on Happy Days a bunch, I think.
And
yeah.
You guys did Mulan on the, the Kiss Your Franchise Goodbye podcast. He's the emperor in Mulan.
Yes, he is.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't even realize.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah, that was his voice.
Yeah. But Savannah Smiles was what, I guess 2 years before Karate Kid?
Yes.
Was it only 2 years?
Yeah.
Huh.
It was. I know that's a funny thing you say. Was it only 2 years? Because it's Savannah Smiles, 1982 movie officially, and you're like, oh, 1982, not 1968.
Yeah, it feels like a 1974 movie.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Well, Mark, run us through this. Give a brief summary of the plot of Savannah Smiles.
Well, how can I describe Savannah Smiles? It's like a combination of the Apple Dumpling Gang, Every Which Way But Loose, and a whole host of early 80s country movies.
I haven't seen any of those.
All together mashed up in one. So it opens up with like the worst opening five ever. Like it's just ludicrous. So you have a character by the name of Boots, which, you know, I'll admit I love. So Boots.
I knew you'd love Boots.
Yeah, Boots is checking out his friend Alvy in there was that prison labor thing.
Yeah,
and he's breaking up rocks or shoveling dirt or whatever it is that he's doing, and it's in Texas.
Well, it's not.
Well, it's not. I mean,
the flag is in Texas, but that's definitely
flag is waving, and I'm like, I know that's not Texas.
John, does that look like the Kennecott copper mines? Maybe.
I was thinking it was the Kennecott copper mines, but it's not that either. I think it's just like, I think it's a model of the Kennecott copper mine or something. But I didn't notice the Texas flag. Is that part of the story? Are they supposed to be
They're supposed
Texas?
To be in Texas.
They're supposed
and then
to be.
They drove to Utah after that.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, they're in Texas that doesn't look like Texas, but there they are. And Boots is – he's got this detonating device. And, I mean, you can clearly see him looking at everybody. So you know that they're seeing it. It's just ridiculous. Anyway, so he detonates a vehicle that blows up, which, by the way, when I first did a search for Savannah Smiles, the initial image was a car blowing up and Savannah's face like right in front of it. And I had no idea what to expect. So, I mean, right off the bat, this explains that. So anyway, Boots blows up this vehicle as a distraction. And Alvy's like, what is going on? And then out of nowhere, Boots shows up in this weird camouflage vehicle. It's got like tree limbs sticking out of it.
Yeah.
It didn't even do good job. That's just dead limbs sticking out of it. And he pulls up close to where Alvy's at. And everybody's seeing him. He's like, jump in the car, bro. So Alvy's like, I guess, what the heck? So he jumps into the car. And everybody's chasing them, and because he's so well camouflaged with tree limb, he hides by a tree, and everybody passes them by.
The cops don't stand a chance.
They don't. So he hits reverse, and he goes right into a lake, and camo truck turns into a boat.
Yep, that's a Lake Powell, I assume.
Yeah. And
crossing into Utah.
As they're making their getaway in Lake, I don't know, Placid or whatever it is, you hear Alvy saying, you broke me out. I get out on Friday. So that's the start. That's the first 5 minutes. And they're the most ridiculous 5 minutes. It's just crazy. Anyway, Boots has an interesting helmet while he's doing all this. And that was kind of cool. So they make their way to Utah, to their hideout, I guess. And Alvy's kind of ticked off because, you know, he was going to go out on parole, but his friend broke him out. And now they're fugitives of the law. They go out looking for some food, I guess. And throughout this whole process, we get to see there's a cutscene that shows a very wealthy family having dinner with some some big wigs. And everybody's laughing it up, you know, like rich men style. And there's this little kid who's obviously very not happy. She just has this sad look on her face. Nobody's paying attention to her. She doesn't like the food. And she leaves a note to her parents saying that she's gonna bounce. She doesn't like the house anymore.
Well, if you remember at the dinner party, she comes down to, you know, to have her parents put her to bed, right? And I think the father says, Samantha, go back to bed.
Yeah, something like that.
Or
like,
Sally, they go back to bed.
Yeah.
Colette, go to bed.
Yeah, like get on out of here, kid. They don't care her. They don't care about her. So she's upset and she's like, I'm out. You know, I'm out of 5,000. I'm out of here. So she takes off, and then we go back to Boots and Alvy, who are just two of the most moronic people ever. In search for money, they hold up. They hold up some dude. Is this in Provo? I don't know.
I don't know where the store is, but that's Piglet. They hold up a Piglet.
Yeah. Or they hold up a Piglet.
Well, I mean, that's the actor, right? Who plays Piglet.
The actor who plays Piglet, yeah.
Alvy uses the most convincing cover-up ever, which is the red bandana. Because apparently he thinks it's still like 1845. And that's going to, he's like, this is a stick-up. Give me all your money. And the guy only has like $13 because it's, you know, nobody lives in Provo, I guess. Nobody gives this guy business. So they escape and they don't have money and they're all feeling sorry for themselves. So in the next scene, they're out looking for, I guess, something to eat, and they're in their car. You know what I don't like? That they escape on a water car boat. And for some reason they're hitchhiking like in the next scene. Like, what happened to this vehicle?
Like, yeah, I was thinking that too.
It's like, what, is at the bottom of Lake Powell.
Yeah. it might be that, okay, they have, it's like one of those emergency use water boats where once it goes in the water, brother, that ain't coming out of the water.
Yeah, I suppose that makes sense. Yeah, so they hitchhike, and they're in the back of a truck, and some kids are making fun of Alvy. Alvy takes offense to it, and he jumps out. So they're footing it. And then they steal some car that barely works. The muffler keeps blowing out, even though we don't see any smoke. But that kind of bothered me, just sound effects. Anyway, so they get pulled over by a cop. And, you know, they're like, you know, be cool because, you know, we're fugitives. You know, we don't want to do anything to attract attention. And the cop's asking them, like, you know, I forgot the reason why he stopped them. But he looks in the back and he says, hey, is this kid yours? And they turn around and they see a little girl. And it's that little girl who was ticked off that her parents don't like her anymore. And they're like, oh, this kid. And they're like, oh, it's not your kid. And they're like, yeah, sure, sure. This kid's ours. It's my sister's kid. She's my niece. We're going to go take her for some ice cream. And at that point, the cop gets a call on his radio saying that he's needed because some kid's missing. And he boosts. Like, the guy doesn't put one and one together right there. Like, you flat out tell him, there's a little girl missing. We need you. And he sees the two guys with this girl that they obviously were freaked out about.
The like, most suspicious scene he's ever seen.
And he's like, I'm going to let you guys go, but I want you to know I'm keeping my eye on you. He leaves.
He was progressive. I mean, especially back then. He's like, oh, yeah, this was definitely a same-sex couple who just finished their adoption of the little girl.
I'm pretty sure that was what was going down.
They don't know how to use seatbelts.
Just so they freak out that this little girl's there, and they keep telling her, like, you got to go. You got to go home. You can't hang out with us. You're going to cramp our style.
Does it seem excessively hard for them to get rid of her? Like, it seems like they should just be able to pull her out of the car and drive away.
Yeah, just dump her out. Like, this isn't difficult.
Just, like, hang her in a plastic bag from a tree kind of thing.
Yeah, well, and Allie pulls her out. He dumps her on the street, and they're driving away, and she starts running after them.
She runs it down, like the Terminator 2.
Yeah, she runs it down. And he's looking at the rearview mirror, and he's like, oh, this kid.
She's getting closer.
She's already tugging at my heart, so let's get her back. So they put her in the car, and they go to their hideout, and Alvy's having a bad attitude about this because he doesn't want this kid around. And Boots is already in love with this kid. You know, he wants to buy her everything. And that's the other thing that bothers me. They're holding up gas stations for money, and all of a sudden they have all this money to buy groceries and toys.
So it
no sense.
Well, so and they give her the special bedroom that's made out of herpes and asbestos.
That's the worst bed ever, man. Like, how this kid didn't get any STDs whatsoever. Like, that bed looked nasty. Like, I have no idea what was going on there. They're trying to figure out what to do with this kid. And Alvy picks up newspaper, and he sees the kid's picture. Oh, because she won't reveal her name to them.
Yeah.
They're asking her, you know, hey, kid, what's your name? Come on, sweetheart, tell us your name. And she's like, no, I'm not going to tell my name. So Alvy picks up a newspaper, and he sees her picture, and he sees that her name is Savannah, and he also sees that she's missing and presumed kidnapped. And he starts hatching this big old idea. Now that everybody thinks that she's kidnapped, and they have her, and she's related to a super wealthy business person. They never say what he does, right? I'm guessing oil. I don't know.
I don't know. But he's like trying to run for some sort of political senator, position, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he's like the pre-Romney.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, he's rich. We don't know why. I don't know what you guys make your money out of over there in Utah. It's oil here in Texas. I guess I'm like honey or something over there.
It's all honey. Yeah,
that's
it's
a good
all
guess. Honey. Yeah, we don't.
Beehives everywhere. So her parents are looking for her. They're freaking out. They can't find the kid. She thinks she's kidnapped. And that's where we see Mission Impossible's Peter Graves come in, and he's like, he is the seriousness in this movie. He brings gravitas to this movie in like five scenes, and that's it. And he's like, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. We think we know who it is. They're two escaped convicts, and they show Alvy and Boots' pictures, and they're like, it has to be these two based on descriptions from that cop that let him go. And I like how they don't really chastise the cop. They're like, hey, you know, you had these guys. He's like, yeah, I didn't know. Nobody told me until afterwards. I'm like, all right, we'll just forget about it. So they know that Alvy and Boots have the kid. They're out looking for him. And Alvy hatches this plan to return the kid back, but to ask for $100,000. And that's how they're going to get super rich. Mm. And I can't, I mean, was $100,000 a lot of money back in the early 80s?
Sure. And they try to rope Lurleen into their plot as well.
I know. And she's having none of it. So, yeah. So Alvy wants to go wet his beak. He goes to a local honky-tonk that plays the worst country music ever. And the Arlene, who's singing, like, she's giving him the wink. And he's like, ooh, you're cute. And afterwards, he's like, hey, I want to dance. They have the most awkward, weird, slow dance ever.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Like, they're touching each other's face. It was so awkward. And after that, after the flirting's over, he's like, hey, I dig you. I know you dig me. I want you to help me with a plan. And, like, right off the bat, like, who does this? They meet somebody, and they flirt, and they follow it up with, hey, by the way, since we're flirting, you want to help me kidnap a kid? Like, that
well,
was his
plan. I think they want her help to unkidnap the kid.
Well, yeah, but
for
still,
money.
I mean, she'd be involved. Like, that's just...
That's totally true. I mean, it's risky, but I mean, who are they going to convince? Someone they didn't flirt with? I mean, at least that's something. I mean, these are desperate guys, right?
I guess, you know, all rules go out the window in honky-tonks. I don't know. I've never been to one. Anyway, so she's like, I don't want any of this. And he goes back home and he's like, well, I had a plan, but Arlene doesn't want to go with it. So we're back to square one. You know, how do we get money for this kid?
Yeah. You know, what really throws a wrench in his plan, though, is when he falls in love with Savannah because she tells the most racist Disney story of all time.
I was going to say that guys, that threw me. You know, I had to look this up because – I mean, I'm not from a part of the country where this story is a thing. And apparently, it's an actual story told to kids. I hate the way it sounds, but it's Briar Rabbit and Briar Fox
Brer.
And Tar Baby. Or Brer, right?
Briar
Fox and Briar Rabbit and the Tar Baby.
Yeah.
And when I'm hearing her tell a story and I'm like, am I hearing what I'm hearing? Like... What is this? Like,
she does all the voices.
She does all the voices. And she keeps saying like that, you know, that term. And I'm like, really? I mean, this was cool in Utah back in the day.
Wait, this is Song of the South, isn't it?
It's Song of the South.
Well, yeah. I was never exposed to any of that. Like I had never seen that at all.
I had seen Song of the South. By the way, Song of the South wasn't just popular in Utah, so I just have to say that.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, because John and I are both doing this stupid movie quiz every day, Song of the South was shown in the movie theaters in the early 80s, was the most recent time.
Right.
This country was comfortable enough with its racism in the 80s to watch Song of the South in the theater.
I remember when Song of the South was just another Disney movie. And I think people were kind of like, oh, this is just that Southern one. It's like, oh my gosh, they use terms. Yeah. And it wasn't until, okay, I'm no histriologist or anything, but
histriologist, right?
Yeah, I remember when there was a turn. I remember, you know, it was those PC 90s when we're like, oh, let's think about these things a little bit because we kind of, you know, we didn't really before. And so, like, Song of the South was like a real, like, you know, played in theaters in America, and for example, like an elementary school could like play Song of the South, like on the, you know, projector that they have in elementary school.
Right.
So,
we all sang the song,
yeah,
Zippity Doo Dah,
and they kind of tell the story in Splash Mountain too. It's like, which they never changed.
Right? Splash Mountain's updating.
I think they're finally updating.
Yeah. They're updating. Yeah, I remember watching Song of the South when I was a sophomore in high school.
Oh, wow.
But I remember that it weirded me out, so I kind of checked out from it.
Yeah.
I don't remember there's Brer Fox and Brer Rabbit thing at all. I know the term that they used, and I know how it was used, and I never liked any of that. So when I heard that in this movie, I'm like, oh, no, like, wow.
Yeah,
like they went there. But you know, I'm a librarian, so I did my research, and apparently it's like an old folk tale. And there, last year, there was this gigantic controversy because a black author wrote the story as a children's book. And early this year, there were a lot of librarians who were pulling that book because they're like, oh, this is racist. So a lot of black librarians were countering with like, y'all need to wait a second, because a black author actually wrote this because it's part of the cultural DNA. And it became this big old thing. I'm like, you know, where do we draw a line? Because if we can't talk about this in schools, like why should we have that in our collection? It just became this big old thing. So I get that it's a story now, but to hear it, I was just like, whoa, like it kind of threw me off to see this little girl, little innocent girl talking up that story. It weirded me out.
That's the crazy thing about time travel, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, we're traveling back in time to when little girls speak in ways that we would be horrified to hear now.
Oh, man. So, I mean, when I was a little kid living in Logan, Utah, my grandma had a picture book of Song of the South, and she'd read it to me. My grandma Fillmore, I don't know if you remember her very much, John, but she was, you know, animated, and she did all the things. And so I'm sure she did the accents.
Well, so, you know, past this little racist scene, we have Alvy falling in love with Savannah because she went from annoying to being cute.
Yeah, he gives her his harmonica.
Harmonica.
And then he takes it back.
And then Booth comes with a little a rocking horse.
Yeah.
So it bothers me that they're holding up gas stations and they continue to have all this money to buy groceries and all these toys. You know what bothers me the most? So everybody is on the lookout for Alvy and Boots. There's pictures of them. And they know that the cops are looking for them. And what does Boots say one morning? He gets dressed and he says, I got to go to work. And Alvy says, why are you going to work for? And he says, well, somebody's got to pay these bills. And I'm thinking, if everybody's on the lookout for them, why is he reporting to work? I mean, doesn't his boss know that he's got a known fugitive on his payroll?
He's like, no, that's another Boots that looks like
him. Doesn't he work at the car wash or something? Maybe he can just wear a ski mask to the car wash.
This
protects me from face water. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure Boots' boss is like, no, because that Boots that you're looking for has a Chicago accent. Ours doesn't. His accent kind of bothered me too. Anyway. So Boots calls up Savannah's dad, and you know, with that whole weird accent, and he's like, you know, she here, we got your kid here. And he's like, you know what? I don't even want your money anymore. I want to return your kid. Just, you know, let's come up with a plan to give you your kid back. Don't worry about the money. We were never in it for the money. You know, this whole thing was just one big misunderstanding. And Savannah's dad is like, all right, meet me at a certain place, you know, and everything's going to be cool. Boots comes back and he tells Alvy like what he did, and Alvy gets all upset. He's like, what are you doing, bro? Like, this was our way out. $100,000 could have solved all our problems. And Boots is like, nah, man, like the kid, you know, she deserves better. And I'm paraphrasing, of course. Peter Graves, because he's so awesome, figures out, where Alvy and Boots are, cause he sends a team to go follow them, to track them. And they show up and they surround the house with guns, and they try to shoot Alvy's head off, and they miss by a mile because they're stormtroopers. And their whole idea is to come out with the gun and use Savannah as a shield to show how much they love this
kid. How much they love her.
Yeah, like, we love her so much, we're going to use her as a human shield. And they get in their jalopy and they take off.
It would be amazing if they actually shot. I mean,
it would have been
if they.
There'd been a hail of bullets.
If they actually hit Savannah, because she's the smallest human being in the world, like, it would take an amazing shot to actually hit that.
That would have changed the story big time. Oh, yeah.
Pat Morita's on the scene.
I was about to say, I'm missing one of the most important characters in this movie. Pat Morita's Father O'Hara. It sounds very Irish.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I mean,
he does weddings. He negotiates hostage situations.
He negotiates hostages. So Pat Morita, he finds himself as the second hostage because they're like, bro, we're going to take you as insurance. So here he is with two wanted fugitives with Savannah. He's in the back. and they pull over to this place that has a payphone, and they tell Pat Morita, call her parents and tell them that enough is enough, no cops, we just want to hand her over, we don't want the money. But Alvy says, you know what, make them come with $100,000. So everybody's confused, but whatever. Pat Morita tells them, and they're like, okay, have them meet us at some mountain resort. And is it a mountain resort? I don't know. Y'all are from Utah.
It's up Provo Canyon. It's just a waterfall. And up until 1992, there was a tram. And they mention it in the movie that it's like the world's steepest tram. And I guess it was, but there was an avalanche that tore the
whole thing down. This whole time, I thought like people went skiing around there. That's why there was that tram.
If you go further up the canyon, you've got a couple ski resorts. Yeah,
you can't ski off that tram, which has since been avalanched. But yeah,
it no longer exists.
Yeah, it doesn't exist.
The tram doesn't. The waterfall tram doesn't exist. But there is a lot of skiing, but just not from that tram. You have to go a few miles away. Yeah.
Oh, cool. All right, so. Pat Morita goes to her parents and tells them, like, this is the plan. We're going to go to that ski resort, bring $100,000, and they're going to switch the kid for the money. Everything's good. So, but no cops. And Savannah's parents are like, fine, no cops. Let's go. We got the money. So they go, and Savannah's dad has a suitcase full of money, and they're waiting for Alvy. Alvy comes down the tram by himself. And he faces Savannah's dad and says, do you have the money? And he's like, it's everything's here in this briefcase. Where's the kid? And like, we'll bring her. He gets the briefcase and then he throws it back at Savannah's dad. He's like, I don't want your dirty money. I just want to give you your kid back. So he says, I'm going to go get her now. Goes back on the tram. And on his way up, Savannah's dad decides to be a duplicitous jerk.
Yeah.
And he calls the cops and he says, they're here at the resort, that the waterfall resort, whatever it is, you know, come get them. Pat Morita sees what's going down and he's a cool guy. He's like, oh, you know, backstab. I got to do something. He tells somebody that they call the cops. So he goes up the tram to go warn them. But in the meantime, Savannah, being the kid that she is, she follows her puppy out into the woods and gets lost. And Boots is losing his mind because he can't find her. So Alvy and Boots go out to try to find Savannah. Meanwhile, here come the cops coming up the canyon.
Where'd that puppy come from? That's weird.
Oh, I forgot about the puppy. Alvy falls in love with Savannah so hard that he buys her ice cream and a puppy. And apparently in Utah, when you buy an ice cream, there's a lady selling puppies.
Free. They're free.
That's true. It's like, buy three cones, get a puppy free.
Yeah, get a puppy free. Yeah. So he stuffs the puppy in his jacket, and Savannah's like, you know, what's that wiggling in your jacket, mister? He's like, oh, I guess this puppy. And he gives it to her. She falls in love with the puppy. And it's just
they were going to eat that puppy later. Siege went longer.
It's better than rabbit roadkill.
Yeah.
That makes her go into the woods chasing him because he had to go pee and he finds bears or I don't know what. So she's chasing the puppy. Nobody can find her. Everybody's going crazy. We need to find Savannah. And here come the cops. And Pat Morita's like, oh, God, I better go up there because cops are going to find them. They're going to shoot them dead.
Yep.
And the cops get there. They get Boots because Boots doesn't like walking or running. So they get him quick. And they're like, all right, where's the other guy? And they're like, they see him because he's like 10 feet in front of them.
Mm.
And then Savannah's a further 10 feet. Alvy sees the cops, and he's like, all right, jig is up. That's it. We're screwed. I'm going to go back to jail. He sees Savannah with a puppy, and he sits down next to her. And they share a real nice, intimate moment where he knows that they're no longer going to be together, and he's going to miss her so much. And here come the cops.
And they gun Alvy down.
Thousands of bullets. You know they have murder in their eyes. like they're about to kill him, but here comes Pat Morita, karate kidding his way.
Thank you,
in
Pat.
Between him and the federal agents, he's like, "Stop! There will be no death. This bro is actually a cool guy. I'm not gonna let you kill him." And he ends up saving Alvy's life, and that's pretty much the way it ends. There's a whole goodbye scene between
and a
Savannah
divorce.
And a divorce because Savannah's mom like, "How dare you call the cops?" and she looks at him. She's like, "Goodbye."
He's like, "Forever? You're divorcing me over our daughter, Stacy?"
Yeah, exactly. Stacy.
Remember when Boots called? He's like, "I've got your daughter, Savannah." And the dad's like, "Who?" Oh, yeah.
That kid. The one we don't care about. We're making a big fuss over. So, yeah, that's pretty much the movie. It's not the most horrible movie. It's definitely not the greatest.
It's not the greatest.
It's not. I don't understand why you folks love this thing so much. So, I mean, I'm going to need to know why.
There's always nostalgia, right? But like I said, it had been 30 years since I watched this, and I'm like, okay, honey, get ready to watch a really bad movie. Like, this is this is an awful movie. But, I mean, I kind of really liked it. So, I don't know. I just thought it was really sweet, and the acting was awful, and the story was awful, and nothing made very much sense. And Savannah's parents have a solid gold telephone.
That's true.
But I don't know.
Okay, because the funny thing is like, it's got the Disney live action sort of vibe and feeling.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like this replication of a Disney live action thing that you watch as a kid, and you're like, oh, okay, this isn't a cartoon. It is the real world, but it's very cartoon-ish.
Yeah.
And maybe this will help me transition into the real world okay. And so it's got that vibe, but it doesn't have that – it's not quite Disney levels. But because the thing is about like Disney live action stuff, like Disney live action, they did stuff just like this, I would say, you know.
It's very reminiscent of the Apple Dumpling Gang.
Yeah. Right. And you did mention the Apple Dumpling Gang, which I still need to see. Is that Don?
Oh, Knotts, my God,
Conway?
John.
Don Knotts and Tim Conway. Yeah.
Tim Conway. Yeah.
I'll watch it.
Yeah. So I think we have a category somewhere tucked away called Inept Criminals. Mm-hmm. And this is awesome. The Apple Dumpling Gang is one that I would think of.
You know what kind of bothered me? Well, they're trying to do so much in this movie that they at one point want to be serious about the kidnapping. And that lasts for like 2 seconds, and they bring in forced comedy, and then they bring in other elements that make no sense. For example, Alvy keeps going back to this memory of being in the back of trying to get to the back of a truck, and there's three kids laughing at him, and he hates the world because of this. And then the movie ends with him as a little kid running to the truck, and then the kids stopping the truck and waving him over and picking him up and putting him in back of the truck. And that's how the movie ends.
And that's and how no he joined his first gang.
That truck's taking him straight to jail.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
So, no, I don't know. It's just kind of sweet. And the girls, she's adorable. And, she's definitely was the 80s Shirley Temple, right? So... sadly enough, this actress died at the age of 20 with a huge drug problem. So Savannah things didn't work out very well for Savannah.
She was too adorable. Chewed her up. That sucks.
Yeah. But I don't know, like the parts of this movie that are supposed to be sweet and tug at your heart a little bit, they did for me anyway. And I thought that, he's cute the way he is with her. And Alvy comes around, even though he's got that girlfriend that looks like if a human could look like a cigarette, that's what it would look like.
That's so true.
But anyway, so no, but I thought this would be terrible, and I was pleasantly surprised. I liked it more than I thought I would. But there's probably some serious anchoring bias, or is that what you'd call that for this one? No, because that doesn't apply, because we're not talking about something I've seen first and something I've seen later. So what would it be? Nostalgia bias, is that
just
a thing?
Just nostalgia bias, sure.
Yeah,
which is fine. I must admit, Mark, I'm sorry you didn't like it that much. I can't say I loved Savannah Smiles, but I did find some sparks of charm that I didn't expect to find. I expected it to be dumber than it actually was.
And I thought her mother was pretty good. And I thought, oh, well, she looks familiar. Does she have a career? Nope. This was her last film.
Right. Right. I thought that too. I'm like, I probably just seen her at Dazed Thriftway. That's probably how I know her.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So, I don't know. I'm glad it was chosen. I'm glad we got to watch it. And the thing is, like, as soon as it ended, I wiped the single tear trickling down my cheek. I said, okay, kids, sit down. We're watching it again. But that didn't happen. They're like, no. So,
My daughter said, why are they making you watch this? She was having none of it.
Oh, that's good. Well, good for her.
Nice. Anyway. I get the whole nostalgia thing. You know, I went through the same thing. When was it? Last year?
With
Moonfall. I kept telling Andy about how great Supergirl was based on my memory of it. And I'm like, dude, you should really give it a try. It's really much better than what you think. So I took my own advice, and boy, howdy, that's a terrible movie.
It doesn't work out sometimes.
Was I talking to you? I think I talked about this because I watched Supergirl for the first time ever last year. Like, oh, it's on HBO. I've never seen Supergirl. I watched Supergirl, and I think I kind of liked it in a certain, like, what kind of way? You know, like, what? Because it's like Supergirl, she's not, like, on Krypton. She's on some alternate dimension Krypton, but she knows Superman. It's her cousin, so, you know.
Well, she's on the remnant of Krypton.
She's, like, like
a chunk?
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids remnant kind of thing, because, you know, they're, like, in a weird small dimension or something like that. But she comes to Earth, and instead of, like, fighting crime or whatever, she's like, I'm going to go to Earth and dye my hair and just be in this Catholic school girl thing. Yeah. And most of the movie, she's just hanging out. Like, oh, I'm going to be the roommates with this person. I'm like, what are you? You're Supergirl.
So is it like Heather's? It's like Heather's, except for she's Supergirl?
She's superpowered, yeah.
Yeah. And she murders the Heathers in her school. So
it will not.
Helen Slater, she is pretty great. She was I think one of Jerry Seinfeld's girlfriends.
Oh,
not in real life, in Seinfeld.
In Seinfeld, yeah.
Hey, so this movie is really fascinating because they have Peter Graves in it, right? Who's definitely the biggest name in this movie. But his character, like, it's supposed to lend gravitas, but I swear his character is kind of a joke.
Yeah.
Right? Annoying. Because, like, he's like, okay, you're going to want to do this. And, like, yeah, we did it. And you're going to want to do this. Yeah, we did it. And they name all these
wrong
things.
Wrong in everything.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, I guess I'm useless. Yeah. And they're like, yep.
Michael Parks is a smart guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the only one who wants everybody to chill out. And, like, he could have solved this kidnapping like 1,000 years ago, but Peter Graves keeps getting in the way.
It's almost like the producer of the movie is like, we got Peter Graves. We got him.
Make him do something.
Write Peter Graves into this movie, and then the writer who hates Peter Graves, like, okay, fine, I'll write this guy in. I don't want him in the movie. And all the
lines are
everybody else one-upping Peter Graves, yeah.
So it's funny, as I was looking at the comments, the beginning of the movie, especially during the opening credits where they're supposed to be in Texas, I was like, oh, this is the ugly part of Utah. No offense, Mark. And then they got to, like, where they're supposed to be in Utah, and they're up all the canyons, and it's so pretty. Utah's so pretty.
They just found a dusty part of Utah. They're like, okay, Texas is more dusty than Utah, so we're going to say this is Texas. So they didn't go to Texas. So I'm sure the dusty parts of Texas are better than the dusty parts of Utah.
Sure.
Although I did Roy, I did visit you in San Angelo, and I was pretty horrified at the desolation.
Oh, my goodness, I know.
Yeah,
that was a really, oh my gosh,
West Texas, man.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. All right. Well, do you guys, anything more you guys want to say about Savannah Smiles?
I'll have more to say later.
Yeah, me too. All right. Over the place. Okay. In the Mood for Love, John.
Yeah.
And by the way,
for love.
Well, I'll complain later. Go ahead.
Okay. You're going to, okay. I know what you're going to say.
Well, do you?
Well, okay, I'm not going to say what you're going to say yet, but if you say it, then I'll say it. That's what I knew you were going to say.
It'll come up in the awards, but go ahead.
Right. I bet I know which award. Okay, fine. Is it in the Name Awards?
No, it's not.
The title of the Film Awards?
No. Okay. Okay, so the poster's a lie.
Okay, yes. Okay, yes. I was going to bring this up in awards, too.
Yes, I was so disappointed.
That never happens in the movie, right? That just doesn't happen.
There's no wraparound groping.
There's no wraparound groping in the movie, which is like, is that the most trollish movie poster ever?
Yes.
Because
there was more groping in Savannah Smiles in that honky-tonk than there was in the entire movie of In the Mood for Love.
That poster is really suggestive for a film that has zero sexing in it, right?
Here's the thing about In the Mood for Love. I didn't know very much about this movie, but unfortunately, all I knew about In the Mood for Love is I heard that the two main characters never hook up or get together.
That it's a PG movie about trying to have an affair.
It's the most it's like psychologically erotic PG movie ever. You know, like
So my wife saw the poster and she's like, "Wait, what on earth are you watching?" I'm like, oh. I guarantee you this doesn't happen in this film.
Yeah,
but close. I mean, I think maybe they brush hands at one point.
But if you didn't know anything about this movie, I mean, I'm really bugged that because this is a famous movie, and you know, it's famous enough that I've heard people talk about it. If I had no idea what the deal is with this movie, I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more because I would have been the entire movie. I would have been okay. This is the scene. This is it. This is where the music is going to swell. This is the green hilly moment. They're going to embrace. They're going to kiss. And then the rest of the movie is going to happen, or one of them is going to die or something. And none of that happens. And they're going to – yeah, they're going to have the wraparound grope. It's been promised to me.
the hand bra grope.
Yeah.
I actually felt bad that I even – nominated this movie because I was like, oh, did I put these guys in a rough position?
Not at all. I've seen this movie before. I love it.
Oh, okay, good. Because I was like, man, Roy's going to kill me. I didn't know what to expect either. I had never heard of this movie. So when I was trying to find movies that I had never seen and I heard about this and it came with a promise that it's, you know, one of the best movies in the year 2000s.
Yeah.
I figured like, oh, I got to watch this. But I was kind of worried that it was going to be a little too hanky-panky-ish.
Oh, not. Oh, but, so Mark. But
not enough.
Yeah, we watched the Duke of Burgundy, so this was not a problem.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's true. You guys did, yeah.
Yeah.
Had way more hand bra in it.
Duke of Burgundy had more hand bra, but also very similar. It also was about this sort of unrequiting, I suppose. Sure. Okay, but let's just get into it. In the Mood for Love, there's this guy named Chow and this girl named Sue. Anyway, it's a guy and a girl.
She's Mrs. Chan. We'll say Mrs. Chan and Mr. Chow.
Miss Chan and Chow. We'll just say Chan Chow. So they are neighbors.
Get so racist.
They both. That's their names. So they both.
This has gone off the rails.
They both rent just adjacent apartments, and they're neighbors, and they're cordial. They say hello. They are both married, and they're kind of like, this is like, I guess this is in the year 2020, when they're the ones working from home because they're worried about COVID, and their spouses are like, they're the ones who have to do the Grubhub driving or whatever they're doing.
They're the essential workers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so their spouses are always gone. And so they have a very cordial, very formal, very chaste relationship. There are sequences, though, where, you know, it's like one of those things where he walks by and she kind of glances his butt or whatever. You know, there's just tons of stuff like that. You know, it's just like humans do. Humans look at butts, right? And
hinders.
Thank you. Gosh, I forgot the word. the rule on this podcast is hinders, always hinders. Okay. But they're cordial with each other. Sometimes they bump into each other at the local restaurant or something. And they're just like, oh, okay, why don't we join each other? And they're very nice to each other. And they, for example, they're like, oh, my husband has that same tie. Oh, my wife has that same bag. And then they look at each other and like she says something like, this might be in one of my awards. She's like, I thought I was the only one who knew.
Right.
They know, and they've been denying it until they reveal it to each other that each of their spouses is having an affair with each other. Mm-hmm. And so they start a relationship of sorts, not a big sex relationship, as we've already said. And they acknowledge it. They say they acknowledge that they like each other, but they also say, I think they're so hurt by the affair that they come out and say, it's like, we can't be as low as them. We can't do what they do. And it's almost like their pride in not doing it is sort of something that carries them on. And I think they know that if they give in, that there would also be that guilt that they're giving in to something that hurt them so much kind of thing. And so
you know what, John? I think Chan is more hurt than Chow. I think Chow knew that they were unhappy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I think he becomes okay with knowing because, of course, it was going to happen. And then, you know, we'll get into why and the emotions he develops. But I had a distinct feeling that he was more okay with the happenings than what she was.
Yeah.
Well, so there's the scene where they practice her telling her husband that she knows about the affair, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. even when it's just practice, she just like she can't handle it. She can't break down, and she says, "I didn't know it would hurt this bad," right?
Right. And that was just that was such a great scene. In so many scenes, I love the scenes where, you know, you see the back of what you think is her husband's head, and they're eating, and she says, "Tell me the truth. Do you have a mistress?" And he's like, "No." And she's like, "Seriously, tell me the truth. Do you have a mistress?" And he's like, "You know, okay, fine." He gives in, and then she starts crying. And then it cuts back, and it's Chow, right? It's like it's them, it's them role playing, and we never really get to see their spouses because they can't communicate with their spouses anymore. They can only communicate through role playing with each other regarding, you know, the infidelity. Right. And so it's just like, so you get a bunch of things like that. And it's like, and it's just, that's another thing. It's like, oh, when are they going to embrace? When are they going to do this? And, you know, also you're wondering, when are they going to get that violent confrontation with their spouses? And we never get that either. And so it's kind of funny, like not a ton happens in the movie, except kind of toward the end, he gets a separate apartment because they're writing a martial arts book together, which is, I mean, how adorable is that? Right? You know, they're writing this martial arts book together, but they're not hooking up. And then he's like, "Okay, I'm getting a job transfer. Why don't you come with me?" And she says, "No, I can't." But then she kind of decides to, but then she doesn't make it in time. And so then he goes off, and then years later, you know, she kind of calls him and she prank calls him and then hangs up, and he goes to what is that place?
She enters into his apartment.
She does.
And smokes and does she smoke a cigarette?
Yeah, she smokes a cigarette because that's how she finds out. He finds out that she was there. And so they're still like just doing this thing. They're just going to the edge and they never come back. But they just never get together. That's it. If you haven't seen In the Mood for Love, I'm really sorry. Why are you listening to this right now if you haven't seen In the Mood for Love?
So this movie though, it kind of reminds me of the Moonlight Sonata. From Beethoven, right, where it feels like it's building and building, but it just never does. It never gets there,
right.
But also,
that's a great analogy.
One of my favorite songs of all time. I think it's wonderful. But anyway,
Anyway, he puts his secret because he says, you know, they said in the old days, you would put a secret in the tree.
I love that.
Tell anybody, and then you would cover it with mud, so then the secret could exist there. You told that secret, and so he does the same thing. I think he does it the temple at, like Angerot.
Yeah.
I've been there, by the way. It's lovely.
Oh no way, right, really?
I forgot to French kiss the hole with my secret.
I love how it ties into that scene where he's talking to Ah Ping. About, you know, he tells him, you know what they used to do, you know, when there was a secret that they didn't want anybody to find out.
Yes.
And Ah Ping's like, "What, bro?" And he's like, "Well, you know, you carve out a hole, you make out your secret to the tree, and then you stuff it with mud." And Ah Ping's response was like, just so brilliant. Because he's like, I just go get some. Like, I don't know why you went through all that trouble.
He was that guy. He was the guy who purposely left his hat at her apartment so he could go back. He's like, she's married. Yeah.
Ping reminds me. Ping feels like Chinese Polly from the Rocky.
He's Chinese Polly from Rocky. Yeah.
That's totally he's true. Also the realest character because he has a sit down with Chow, and he's the only guy being a friend because he says, "Hey." Mm-hmm. By the way, I don't know if I should tell you, but I saw your woman with a man. And Chow, you know, initially denies it. He's like, "Yeah, but they were being a little more friendly than what you would expect." So, like, he's the only guy who's stepping in and saying, like, "Hey, this is what's happening."
Yeah. And I don't know what it is about 1962 Hong Kong, if it's sort of Victorian, if there's some kind of culture there. I also think maybe Wong Kar-wai picked 1962 Hong Kong so he could have everybody smoking all the time because that looks really cinematic.
Oh, Oh man. So there's some fascinating things about this film. I love that it's 1960s Hong Kong because I love her dresses. Her dresses are just incredible.
Yes. We're gonna get there. Yeah, the dress like she has like 30 dresses and it's like, oh wow.
And they're all gorgeous.
Each one's so incredible.
Great. Yeah.
I love that to give him a treat, she makes him a bowl of syrup. And I'm assuming he drinks
syrup.
Sesame syrup.
We used to punish each other for losing a basketball by making each other drink 5 straight seconds of syrup. And so I assume that's what this is.
That's what they do in 1962 Hong Kong. Yeah.
So you have a really great score, but it's it's punctuated by like this plucking of strings that is.
I love that, Roy. You have no idea how much I love the music in this movie.
Yeah, and then one of the biggest things that they come back to again and again is just her fingers, and there's like so much emotion in just her like kind of squeezing her hand and tapping her fingers, and I don't know. This movie tells a lot with not many words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
I forgot to mention one very important thing that I was going to mention at the beginning of my summary. And this is extremely important. These two characters are both so hot. They're both so hot. They're just crazy hot. And that
he's an attractive man. Yeah.
Yeah. Tony Leung is amazing looking. And and I was kind of thinking, it's like, okay, this is one thing if they're just two normal neighbors, but these are the two hottest neighbors ever. How can they not? Just do each other.
They're gonna get it on.
Like I just can't emphasize how hot both these people are. That's important. An important part of the movie to me. Okay. More. Anyway, that's what I have for In the Mood for Love. Is there anything I missed?
It's weird because we just spent 2 hours talking about Savannah Smiles and 10 minutes talking about In the Mood for Love. It feels like there should be a lot more to say about this movie, but maybe there isn't. This movie. Right, the plot's not very heavy, and it's just this movie is a feeling, and it's a sensation. It's not much else, right? I mean, it's just.
I want to know, and John touched on it a little bit, but the significance of not showing the significant others. We never see their faces, and it should have bothered me, but it kind of didn't, I have a weird theory as to why, and we're going to talk about that later. But it's such an odd artistic choice not to show the significant others. I mean, is it because they're just way hotter than the hot people that we're seeing?
And you'd be confused. You'd be like, this doesn't make any sense.
it's unfair. Like, you'd be like, no wonder they cheated on each other.
Maybe they're way less hotter.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
I think it's just not the focus of the film. And then if you do see their spouses, and then I don't know, it kind of this movie is all about
to hate them.
Yeah, you do want to hate them, but this movie is about being like as minimal, I think, as possible, right?
Yeah. I think I think two things. First of all, it's very economical. It's like, you only need the backs of extras' heads or whenever, if that ever shows up. And second of all, I think it shows a bit more isolation, they only have each other. And I think,
they're so alone. You don't even get to see their spouse. Yeah. And it makes it feel like they never get to see their spouse. That's how alone they are.
So you're a party to the loneliness.
Yeah. That's totally perfect. Okay. I'm changing my tagline now. A party. Okay. But I think correct me if I'm wrong. I think the best shot you see of is his wife. Like Chan's hair is always up, right? It's always kind of like got like that mom upness kind of thing. But I think it's his wife who's like it's like her blurriness. It's like the kind of chin length hair, and you just see someone who's blurry who's just crying. And so, like, I could be wrong because I'm like, because I was taking notes and I was looking up and maybe I missed who it was, but I think, we see this blurry spouse just crying in the shower. And
you
like,
see her from, I think you, I don't remember seeing her in the shower, but I know you see like his wife from behind for a brief moment.
Right. I feel like it's the person who's crying. I may have just misread the scene entirely, but I kind of got the sense that it just quickly kind of shows kind of the anguish on the side of the affair as well. Like, it's not like fun and games for them either necessarily.
She is crying in the bathroom, but that, the scene that preceded all that was, and it kind of like broke my heart, was when Mrs. Chan goes to her neighbor's house because she suspects something. She's hearing voices, and she knows that the Koos who own that apartment aren't there. Yeah. And she's like, well, that's weird because Mr. Chow's at work, so why am I hearing voices? Is it what I think it is? So she goes and she knocks and she's like, hey, you know, I know that the Koos aren't here and I hear more than one voice. Is everything okay? And she knows at that moment, she knows my husband is there. Mm-hmm. And when Chow's wife closes the door, she says to the man that's there, it was your wife.
Oh, yeah.
So they know that they're found out. And I think by this point, Chow's wife has fallen in love for Mr. Chan. And the fact that they can't be together, at least even in hiding, is kind of breaking her apart. And that's why she's crying. That's the way I read it. I don't know. How did you guys see that?
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. I just kind of thought – I didn't realize the intricacies of the plot in that moment. So that totally makes sense. I just kind of like – there are a lot of things I kind of missed, which is the unfortunate thing. You know, the subtitled movies that we watch tend to be better than the normal movies we watch, the normal in English movies we watch. But I miss so many subtleties like that because I tend to look down. Yeah.
So now I was going to ask. Then you guys both did a subtitled version because I would have preferred to have listened to English dubbed for that very reason, right? Mm-hmm. I love hearing the Chinese and I love hearing their voices, but also it. Especially when I'm trying to take notes. It's so hard to pay attention reading subtitles and taking notes that I feel like I missed something.
Which is – how ironic is that? Because we're taking notes, we get less of the movie. That sucks. I did forget to mention one scene that I really loved because, you know, they're just so – you know, they're so into propriety, right? And so there's the scene where she is over – at his house or something, and then like the neighbors come and they come and play mahjong. Like, only stay, you know, for 8 rounds of mahjong or whatever. And since she's back in his room and they don't want to like the appearance to be all like, ooh, ribaldry, you know, in front of the neighbors. Like she has to just stay there all night.
Yeah.
And she has to call in sick to work the next day. And it's funny, like kind of weird sacrifices. It's like, okay, they're doing all this stuff. They're being so secretive because they're being so good. And that's why they're being so secretive.
Yeah. It's hard though, because like they make her stay over to play mahjong. She has to watch mahjong for 8 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like your friends inviting you over to watch like a best 2 out of 3 of Risk, but you don't get to play. You're just watching.
Have you guys ever tried Mahjong? Been wondering about that. Really? Pretty fun? Yeah,
it's fun.
Really?
It's fun.
Yeah, I need to put that on my bucket list. It seems like that would be a fun thing to do before I die.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I hadn't done it in the longest time, but it was fun when I last did it. So I used to be a teen librarian. I'm an adult service librarian now. Yeah. And the community I serviced had a large percentage of Asian Americans. Uh-huh. And like recent Asian Americans. And we used to have
became Asian?
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah. It's John Smith. Became Asian. No, and so we used to have this World Culture Celebration Days, and it was a week long thing. And every one of the teens that came from a certain place, they would get dressed in traditional wardrobe and bring a traditional food staple, and everybody would be like, "Oh, I'm eating this now. I get to experience what it is to be Filipino. Fantastic!" But on the lead up to that, they would just bring stuff. That from their hometown or whatever, just to show amongst ourselves, just to show us like what they used to do. And a couple of them brought the mahjong tiles and they taught me how to play the game. It was pretty cool, but it does take forever. It's like the cricket of card games, but they're not card games.
I don't mind it taking forever, but what I do worry is it's going to be so complicated that I lose interest.
A little bit, but you get it fairly quickly. It's not super difficult. Okay. I mean, chess is more difficult than mahjong.
Okay, I'll try mahjong. We'll do that. How many people do you need? Do you need 4 people?
I mean, there was like half a billion of them whenever I had my teens together. So I don't know how much more different it would be with like four people. So I can't call to that. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Mahjong Newport. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, cool. I hope you try it one day.
Well,
yeah, I think so. Well, are you guys ready for a real tale of love and triumph and redemption?
Moodfall.
In the Moodfall. So, clocking in at a robust 130 minutes.
Wow.
And there were multiple times that I checked how much longer the movie had to go.
It's so terrible.
So, Mark, what led you to choose Moonfall?
I was actually dared by a couple of friends of mine to watch this movie. Because they were telling me, dude, you gotta see this. And I'm like, man, I really don't want to. I've seen the trailers. It just looks all sorts of stupid. I don't want to waste my time. They're like, seriously, you gotta watch it. And then, you know, I finally got to the point where they're like, you gotta promise me you're gonna watch it. So I told them, you know what? I promise you that eventually, before the year's over, I'll get around to it. So, and then I had to choose three movies that I've never seen. And I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna kill two birds with one stone. Watch this to please my friends daring me, and then I'll watch this because I've never seen this movie, so it fits the bill.
You got it out of the way in the front half of the year, so now you're clear.
I did.
Yeah.
Well, I kept my word.
Let me tell you what this movie's about. Okay. Right. So this movie is about a handful of folks that are just having a real rough time. They've someone's lost their job. A couple marriages are broken up. This guy's kid is always getting arrested. And this guy's mom has Alzheimer's, and someone has to move to New Jersey. And there are like 10 other human interest stories happening in this film. And then also the moon is...
The moon solves all of that.
The moon is about to land on the earth. So we have our hero from The Conjuring, and he's an astronaut. And they wake up the moon beast by playing Toto. Which just enrages the moon beast, which comes out of the hole, and it's like a bunch of nanobots, right? It's like AI nanobots. Yeah. Anyway, they lose an astronaut. It wrecks the shuttle, which they safely bring back to Earth, but because he insists on telling his crazy moon bot story, he gets kicked out of the military or the being an astronaut, and now all he can do is like give seminars at crummy little. Like observatoriums, right? Yeah, I think my term was the correct one, staratorium.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Stand corrected.
Yeah. And he's I think that his apartment manager's been trying to evict him for the last 2 years based on how many eviction notices are piling up on his table.
California liberals and their eviction rules.
I guess, but like his landlord's not very good at evicting. So anyway, the point is we have a nerd, a big giant nerd who learns that the moon is out of orbit, and he learns it slightly before NASA does, and he throws it on the social media, and before like anyone can get really excited about it, the moon starts coming towards the Earth, and you know, water is flooding and water is floating and people are jumping higher and pieces of the moon are starting to shred up, and they're like, well, we got
hot hail.
Now they send like a mission to go and deal with it, but the moon nanobots kills everyone in the ship real fast. And what's left to do? Well, they have to go find like a museum relic shuttle, and they're going to send that to the moon, which I'm not sure the space shuttle is a ship that is designed to go to the moon, right? I guess
it is if the moon is 50 feet away.
Yeah. Which at the end of the film it is, right? Like when they rapidly exit the moon, and I think they weren't expecting to see the moon 5 feet or the Earth 5 feet in front of their face when they come up. But anyway, so yeah, this daring mission, they take the, what's the guy's name? Casey?
Casey's the Game of Thrones guy.
Casey, yeah, the Game of Thrones guy. Who's he playing Game of Thrones?
He's Samwell Tarly.
Okay. Well, there you go. I knew he looked familiar. So, he comes with them because that makes sense, and they barely get that shuttle off the ground in time because there's a tsunami that has arrived, and the water is tsunamiing up towards the sky, towards the moon, and they take that shuttle to the moon, and when they get to the moon, they go down.
They surf to the moon.
They surf to the moon.
Pretty much, yeah.
They get to the moon.
To the moon.
And they go into the hole, and what do they realize? That it's just a giant structure. And when they get inside the structure, can you guys help me out here? The curvature on the inside of the structure means the moon is about a mile wide. Right?
I didn't notice the curvature that you were talking about.
It's like way too curvy. Like the moon is, you shouldn't be able to see like it curving in front of you.
Right. I noticed all the rings.
Yeah.
But those weren't necessarily. Those were just the rings in the. Well, I don't. Well, no, you're right.
Rings. They never really explain what the rings are.
Because they don't. They don't go into the moon.
The moon is
far.
A clock.
Don't they only? They only go 20 kilometers into the moon, which is kind of still on the surface of the moon. So yeah.
So okay. So anyway, the moon is a giant. Was it a megastructure?
Megastructure.
They said megastructure mega amount of times in the.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
So, but the point of the moon. Is that there was the ancestors of Earth had a wonderful civilization, and they invented Skynet, and they turned Skynet on, and Skynet freaked out and started to kill them. So they built the moon. They built lots of moons, and they send them out. But Skynet destroyed all those moons except for this one. This one got away, and it hid in front of Earth, and the nanobots came all the way through space and tracked him down and has been spending.
I want to go back to this because like this is just so mythological, and I don't know. Yeah. I kind of thought it was cool.
Well,
like,
they didn't park in front of Earth. They created Earth.
They created Earth.
There you go. Yeah.
Like the moon, you know, it's like one of those things. I remember reading like an old encyclopedia where there were like the – like scientists don't know for sure like how the moon came about. And like one of the things was like when the Earth was spinning, when it was being created, when all the matter was collecting, and like a big chunk of matter flew off of the Earth and that became the moon. Or did the Earth like – was like a nearby like giant asteroid? Was it captured by the pull of the Earth, or were they both just kind of – was just matter spinning around and they were just both near each other and they just –
I've always heard theory
is that in their formation of Earth, a comet hit
the Earth
formation.
And a chunk of Earth.
And the chunk became what we now know as the moon.
Right. And so like I kind of like this movie where it's just like, okay, no, the moon came to our solar system and there was just all this debris, and then the moon just spun around the debris really fast and it created the Earth because that was the – that was like – and that's why the Earth is so perfect for life because it's just like, okay, it decided right there in that perfect zone. So that was just kind of I thought the simulation part, that was kind of a fun sequence.
So inside the moon is a tiny little star, right? A white dwarf star?
A white dwarf.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. Would the gravity inside that moon be incredible then?
It would be. And the radiation would have killed everybody.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Don't want to get too close to that white dwarf.
That's why those gears are spinning around. It creates this reverse polarity, gravity.
Sure.
Pronoton. I think it's a pronoton.
Okay.
A pronoton.
So I'm going to wrap up my summary because then we got to talk about stuff.
Okay.
But so I guess the nanobots have been trying to get into the moon for a really long time.
Yeah.
And now, for whatever reason, they've decided that they can crash the moon into the Earth, and then not only do you kill the nobody who's left inside the moon, but also all the people on Earth, because the nanobots just want to kill people. They just want to destroy all the people.
Yes. Yeah. That's pretty much, horrible. Yeah. That's because people are horrible because they were enslaved by people.
Yeah.
Because people built them to be their slaves. Yeah.
Now here's where it gets crazy. And I thought the moon's going to get really close to Earth, but it can't get that close because, you know, we have to sort of take science a little bit seriously, right? But the moon literally rolls along the surface of the Earth. Or it's like it's smashing mountains, right? It's just insane. And then, like, and so, like, we destroy the nanobots with the moon gives them an EMP pulse machine, which is way better than the stupid human one. And it works, and then within minutes, the moon is more or less back to its orbit. At least it's not on top of the Earth anymore. But it seems like once the two bodies are touching, it would take such an enormous amount of force to lift the moon.
Maybe the power of a dwarf star.
I guess. I don't know. It's pretty crazy. But everyone's happy. Our fat friend who does the EMP pulse dies, but before he dies, they upload his consciousness into the moon. So he's now basically the moon. His brain's the moon. And then at the
man
end,
the moon.
At the end where it's like, yay, we all won, and you know, the people we cared about didn't die, and then the credits say something like, the end, question mark? Because this movie was like, we're definitely going to be successful enough for a sequel. This is where, like, two moons crash on the Earth. I don't even know, like, what you could
It's going to get weird.
It's going to get weird. So
all of Jupiter's moons.
Yeah. But so there's a couple things I want to talk about. At the point where the moon is basically 10 feet away from the Earth, that's when all the military in the world wants to launch every nuclear weapon to the moon. And I'm not sure what the theory is.
Like, why?
Behind nuking the moon when it's, like, a mile away from the Earth. It.
Like, okay, let's just drop all pretense of science and just say, all right, I'll give you this. You're going to nuke the moon. Send the nukes. if what you want to do is to blow the moon so it can go away, what you're doing with nukes, even if you should manage to crack the moon, it's going to land on you, bro.
Yeah.
It's not going to go away. So, like, it's just basic science will stop these idiots.
There's no way. I agree with you guys.
You can't smash the moon into pieces with nuclear weapons. You just can't. It's too big, right? No. But it, like Mark said, if you manage to break it into a couple pieces, it's just going to crash onto the Earth. It's just.
It is. Here's what I say, though. I mean, so what do you do then? You just let the moon hit you? Just blow the Earth up?
Well, maybe you move to the side of the Earth where the moon isn't touching.
the dark side of the Earth.
So, and also, would this stop the spinning? But whatever. Okay. So, I kind of feel like with the nuclear weapons, I don't know. It just needed to be one of those things, right, where we could get angry at, of course, the military wants to nuke the moon. And so it was just thrown in there for that. Because I thought at the beginning of the movie, at some point someone's going to suggest they need to nuke the moon, but that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. Like, it doesn't serve any purpose other than it has to be a plot point in this film.
I think the funniest thing about nuking the moon is they're like, okay, well, we want to nuke the moon, but we can't nuke the moon because we can't send the rockets into space. Like, the moon has to be in the atmosphere because that's as far as our rockets go. It's like, I don't know, you sent a space shuttle up. I mean, if they're going to nuke the moon, then you nuke the moon. You could probably do that in the first week rather than the last 12 hours.
Yeah.
If you were serious about nuking the moon, then your priority should have been to find the right shuttle, put the nuke in it, and then send the shuttle to nuke the moon instead of trying to keep the launch from happening.
Yeah.
Like, here's all in reverse. This is just so insane.
See, here's what they should have done. This is what they should have done. Because it's like, okay, they're sending space. They got the space shuttle Endeavor out of, like, the Smithsonian Museum. and there should have been some smarmy government guy who, like, secretly put, like, 5 nuclear warheads aboard.
There should have been.
Endeavor, you know, like before, and he's like, and he's got like his thumb on the trigger and he's just sweating, and then Patrick Wilson's son had to like pistol whip him before he did that or something.
that would have made the movie watchable.
So
the big thing that happened during this film that was kind of interesting to me was I thought it was like this like pseudoscience disaster film with the moon, but then halfway through it, like it changes like big time. Right now, it's like this crazy sci-fi fantasy alien movie, and I thought, okay, well, I guess I don't have to worry about stupid science anymore because that's not really what they're going for here. And I was hoping to get pulled back in by, you know, maybe this daring science fiction story, and then the movie, you know, it eventually ended. So,
but it was just like the smoke monster from Lost.
Yeah.
So I think that may be like something that's kind of hard to latch onto. It's like, oh, okay, well, you know, a CGI nanobot thing.
Yeah.
It looks really cool, but you know, we've kind of seen stuff like that in movies like this for 20 years.
What I would have liked is they get inside the moon and there's this huge war going on, and there's like this hill, and at the top of the hill is this giant pirate ship wheel. And whoever controls it just either steers the moon towards the Earth or away from the Earth.
It's King of the Moon Hill.
The King of the Moon, yeah.
That would be great, yeah, because like for the longest time, just the peaceful moon people were just like, slow and steady, that's the way the moon goes. And then just like just this bunch of people who were so bored in the middle of the moon were like, forget this. We're stealing this. We're steering the moon into Earth. We are so sick of just spinning in the same direction and you giving the announcement every 10 minutes that we're still on course.
It's like it's the Paclids of the moon that are taking over.
Oh, God.
Okay, I will tell you something I kind of loved about this movie that I bet you guys didn't love it, but it's just like – it's one of those things. It kind of reminded me of Interstellar, this one part where
– What?
Just this one aspect of it. It's just like all this right. thing.
I'm bearing with you.
First of all, one thing I didn't like is they're like, okay, we ran out of engine coolant. Everybody go home. We'll try again in, I don't know, a month maybe. But they can't because, you know, the moon's going to crash into them. And so it's like everybody go home, everybody go home, everybody go home. And then – right when the moon is flying over, they're like, oh my gosh, we didn't consider the gravity of the moon right as it's flying overhead. We might be able to make it up to the moon if we take off when the moon is right over. But we have to make the decision in 28 minutes. We have to leave in 28 minutes. I kind of like and it reminded me of that part in Interstellar when they land on the planet and they're like, okay, we have – Since there's the time dilation, every second we take here is like 10 years on Earth, so we have to hurry and make the decision, and so they have to hurry and make the decision. I do love in like weird science fiction disaster movies, like, okay, suddenly there's this new thing, and in the next 28 minutes that changes the entire, you know, everything on Earth. Yeah. I kind of like it when stuff like that happens.
So I got to say something about this movie that's really bothering me, though, and it's that I don't really love Africa by Toto.
I knew you were going to say
oh,
that.
Oh, man, really?
Yeah, I never really liked that song.
That bothers me more than the entire movie.
That I don't like Africa?
I've always liked Africa. Song. I'm going to save it. I have a lot of things to say about Africa that specifically bug me, but I'm going to save that for later. So you're going to hear my Africa spiel and my personal feelings on Africa. And not the song, the continent.
Well, I can't wait to hear that. What bothered me about the movie is that they want us to believe that this old-ass person didn't know the actual lyrics to Africa.
Like, yeah, his interpretation
of it. You can't tell me this is one of your favorite songs and that you insist on saying, I miss the rains down in Africa.
Well, I've never heard it that way. I've never even thought for a second maybe they're saying this, yeah.
Nobody has. So right off the bat, in the opening minute, I am already hating the movie because that's so not true. Forget the science that's about to come at us. That right there is not true.
I don't mind that because I've screwed up the lyrics to Africa because the lyrics to Africa don't make sense to me.
Well, it doesn't at all, but this entire time you've been saying I miss the rains down in Africa?
But I think it's forgivable just because the song kind of makes no sense because he's talking about like – he's just kind of talking about like this vague relationship and then – and it's got – and I think the whole reason the song is called Africa is because it's got this African beat. And the whole I bless the rains down in Africa like has nothing to do with the relationship that he's singing.
It doesn't. Yeah, the song doesn't make sense. Yeah. But we're talking about the lyrics. I don't care if the song doesn't make sense. I love that it doesn't make sense. I just love the song. But you can't convince me that this dude thought this entire time that they were saying I miss the rains down in Africa.
Well, like, if I might, you guys know the song I Wanna Rock by Twisted Sister?
Yeah.
Of course you do. Okay, so until about 2 years ago, I thought he was saying, when I feel the music shooting groovy, and I don't know what that meant, but someone told me it's when I feel the music shooting through me. And so I believed that wrong thing for about 20 years. So I maybe, wow. Yeah.
Because I
Wanna
thought...
Rock is not a beloved song, though.
Like, isn't it?
You have to be a Twisted Sister fan, which I am, so I know what you're talking about. But everybody and their mother knows Africa.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been made into music. I Wanna Rock has not been made into music.
Yeah.
You're Toto walking through Target, Walmart, H-E-B. Well, you guys don't have H-E-B.
I just downloaded Africa on Rock Band, so.
Oh, yeah, but you hate that song.
I'm the only American who still plays it, but my kids like it.
Well, okay, that's probably – I imagine that's why you don't like it. Well, because – okay, and we're going to – I might as well talk about this right now. Okay.
Let's hear it.
Okay,
first of all, the lyrics. I got to go back to the lyrics. Sorry, Mark. I'm going to have to side with Night Owl on this one.
No.
Just because for the longest time, I did the exact same thing. Because the lyrics go, there's nothing that 100 men or more could ever do. You know, and it's so the song is about like the lengths that he will go to get to this other person, even though the odds are against him. And so I always thought the lyrics were "I catch the rains down in Africa," as if like some kind of metaphor that like he is willing to like catch all the rains in Africa, even though he's just one human being. And so like 100 men couldn't stop him and the rains of Africa couldn't stop him. And so those two things were related. But it turns out the actual lyrics, they aren't connected, which makes less sense to me.
Hmm.
Okay.
I don't know how you heard catch. Like that's just, that's bothering me more than anything.
It doesn't sound like catch, but those are the lyrics that make sense in my mind. So that's how I interpreted it. So it's like that's my mind filled in that gap. Okay. The other thing I hate about I love the song Africa. I'm not like you, Roy. I do love the song Africa. I think it's a great song. But I'm so pissed because it's January 12th, 2011. And, you know, maybe it's Patrick Wilson's favorite song ever, even though he doesn't know the words. And maybe he was listening to it in 2011. But it just sickens me that this is a flashback to a movie in 2022 where it's flashing back to before the resurgence of Africa.
Oh, the song.
And that's the whole reason why Africa is in this movie, because it had this massive resurgence in the last 5 years. And so I kind of hate that they're playing the song more than 5 years ago. I know that's just like a weird nitpick, but I think it just reeks of obviousness to me that, you know, it's like the 2015 resurgence of Africa crammed into 2011 in a flashback. So that's why.
It's really upsetting. It's
been covered by like a gazillion and a half people like for the past 20 years.
The Weezer one's really the big one. Brought it back, and then it brought back the original one. Yeah. And I think, and that's why it was in here. Yeah.
So can I ask you guys what your favorite, not on my watch statement was from this movie? Cause there were a couple.
I have some other favorite things, but you go ahead with your couple.
Well, so there's, I didn't come this far to fail, but I think my favorite is "I work for the American people."
I was going to say, I hate that line so much. God.
There's nothing we can do. We have to let the moon crash into the earth. Well, not on my watch.
Not on my watch.
There was so much of that. I want to say, I kind of tapped into a different set of lines that just really bugged me. For one thing, like when Patrick Wilson says to Michael Pena, "Go to hell, Tom," and then Michael Pena says, "Yeah, you go to outer space, away from here."
I hate that so much.
And guess what? That's where he goes.
That's where he goes.
and that's why his character deserved to die, just for that one line.
Yeah, I am like, you should have. You should die. And he died, so that was good.
And he died. Yeah. And nobody cared.
My other favorite line from this movie is when they get carjacked on the way to Colorado. Like, everybody left, you know, they have to go to Colorado because that's the last place to be hit by the moon or whatever. Yeah. And they get carjacked, and the guy holds a gun up to Patrick Wilson's son and says, "What are you, a college boy?" Like, that's the thing. That's your insult when you're being carjacked in the apocalypse. Yeah. You're a college boy. And then my other favorite line is when the two random people are looting, and they loot a store, and then the guy, like, takes the money out of the cash register. He's like, "Look at all this money I got." And the other guy goes, "Look around you, man. Money's worthless." And that's true, but this isn't like a year into the apocalypse. Like, CNN is still on TV, you know? Like, you can still use that cash if CNN is still broadcasting and people are still getting up and wearing suits to work. So, yeah, it's just – it's stuff like that. It's like they have all these lines, like the ones you mentioned, Roy, like especially the "I work for the American people" thing, where it's just like, okay – they don't have a screenwriter, and it's not like – it's not that I mind that people say like tropey, stereotypical things. I just feel like the whole movie was just filled with lines on assignment. Like, okay, let's just gather all these lines that have been said in all these other movies and just put them all in here, and there's just no passion or character to any of these lines. It's just like – it's just filling the time with lines that are said in movies like these, and I hate it.
I hate that line that I work for the American people. Like, yeah. I hate it. Like, no, you don't. You work for NASA. Like, you weren't elected. You chose to apply. Like, work for NASA. That, not only does that bother, but then she followed it up with like, and it's the government's job to hide things from people. I'm like, that's what we're
oh man, that's
200 years.
That's specifically what I get paid for every single day.
Oh crap, man.
So let me ask you guys, because Halle Berry is in this movie.
Yeah.
When was the last time she was in a really good movie?
Oh my God.
Like she was so big about a decade ago, and I can't remember the last good movie she's been in.
Well, I liked X-Men 3, but a lot of people hated X-Men
3. I like X-Men 3, but she's not a big part of it.
Okay.
So I guess we're talking about movies where she was at least co-lead, right?
I guess. I mean, it's just like it just seems like her career has like had a slow and steady downhill for the last decade.
We have to look this up. I'm just going to go backwards.
The last I remember seeing her being remotely good in anything.
Did she win her Academy Award for that?
Okay.
Yeah, she did.
She won for Monsters Ball. Okay. Moonfall was the last movie. Bruised. I haven't heard of that. Boss Bitch Fight Challenge. Oh, that's just a video short. Oh, she was in John Wick 3.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And Kingsman: The Golden Circle, which I didn't see.
Which I did not like that Kingsman.
Mm. Okay, you didn't like that one.
It was dumb.
Oh, and she was in X-Men: Days of Future Past. No one liked Days of Future Past, but she was just kind of like a. I mean, she's cameo as Storm because the other person was Storm mostly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cloud Atlas. That was 10 years ago.
You know what? Yeah, I'm in the minority of actually liking that movie.
Oh, I like Cloud Atlas. I haven't seen it. I feel like I should read it. It's like one of those really cool books to read. I really need to get around to that because I hear it's pretty good.
Anyway.
Yeah, I forgot about Cloud Atlas. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Okay, well, that was 10 years ago, so I don't know. She hasn't – but she has a ton of credits, and there's like a lot of movies I don't know about. Like movies called Dark Tide and
– horrible.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys, if you're an actress like Halle Berry or whatever, and you're in Moonfall, I know like for this podcast, John, you post the podcast and then we let it breathe and we pretend it was a really great podcast that we did before we say anything, right? Yeah. So how long after doing press for a movie like Moonfall, how long after the release of Moonfall until Halle Berry can like say that was such a bad movie? When are the actors allowed to like... Because I think of like the last what do you call it? the Fantastic Four, where the actors and the director, it didn't take them very long to say that it was like a really terrible movie that they had made for all of us, but
it was almost immediate.
Yeah,
I mean probably. They have to wait until it makes 50 million. I would say a month after it goes on to DVD, like they can't.
Yeah, I think as soon as it hits the streamers, you're allowed to say it's a crap show.
They can say it's crap. Yeah. So let's see. I don't know if we mentioned In the Mood for Love. It made $14 million. I don't know how much it cost. It looked like it. How could that movie have cost more than $5 million to make? But
yeah, there's no way.
I think it probably cost a lot because the two leads are like were like the two big stars in Hong Kong.
Yeah, that could be. Well. Friends, that was Moonfall, and I appreciate it. I'm glad that we occasionally get to do a movie like Moonfall.
I apologize.
I'm trying to be positive here. So
I liked it more than I was yelling about it a few minutes ago, but I think kind of like it did have some of the sequences, you know, like every time the moon rose, I'm like, oh, here we go again. The moon's doing another pass. People are going to float again. I kind of was like, yeah, okay.
So why did everyone flee to Colorado? It seems like the higher you are, the quicker you're going to get smushed by the moon, right?
And also
the less oxygen there is.
And the less oxygen, yeah. I guess
they're so worried about oxygen, so they're going to go to the highest point in the country.
So it's to get away from the water. Is that it, I guess?
I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, let's do some stupid awards, huh?
All right. Okay, stupid. Oh, wait. Really quick. Do you want to do contact intro? Yeah.
Hey.
We'll try to do that. Yeah.
John, you go for it. You're so good at this.
Okay, contact info. I'm going to just go really fast. First of all, I'm going to say give us a call, 801-896-4542, 801-896-4542. Say whatever you want. We'll at least play a portion of the non-offensive parts of your voicemail message. If you call, we won't answer. You can just say whatever you want to the internet robots, so, and then we'll do that. Okay, go ahead and find us on iTunes and subscribe. Give us 5 stars on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever it's called now. Do the same thing on Spotify and do the same thing on Stitcher. Give us 5 stars on all those places and make sure you leave a review. That's the most important thing you can do. Our podcast is called Yours, Mine, and Theirs, if you didn't know. Okay, so anyway, if you want to go back and find all our past podcasts because the iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever doesn't go back far enough, and you want to see pictures from all the movies that we do or whatever, you know, it's something or one of the movies that we do for each podcast. Okay, anyway, you can do direct downloads of all the MP3s on our blog. That's what I was trying to say. So Yours, Mine, Theirs podcast.blogspot.com. Go there. And then you can check out all the other movies we covered going way back to 2017 or whenever we started doing this. Yeah. Okay, so then the other thing is go to Facebook and do a search for Yours, Mine, and Theirs podcast, and you'll be able to find us there. The good thing about Facebook is that's where the democracy happens. That's where you can vote in polls, such as the poll that Mark put up that enabled us to watch these 3 movies because he's like, okay, I'm just going to leave this to the masses. And we do stuff like that. And we do a little like that every other time where it's like, hey, the masses get a vote on one of these movies from this particular genre we pick. So go find us on Facebook, join our group, and then vote in the polls because that controls us. And we love being controlled. That's why we do the podcast.
And tell them Mark sent you.
Yep, do that. We'll give you $5 off if you tell them Mark sent you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've already mentioned this, but go check out the Kiss Your Franchise Goodbye podcast.
Oh, we need to do that, yeah.
They're good peeps.
Good people, yeah. And what, you guys are still doing Disney Princesses, or you're on the tail end of that?
I believe they're still doing Disney Princesses.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm in a hiatus of sorts.
Well, thanks for coming on our show during your
Oh, so you're part of the show. Yeah. So yeah, you joined us. You fled.
Take that, Andy.
Franchise Yours, Mine, and Theirs. Yeah, that's perfect. That's what we want to hear. Yeah.
Andy wouldn't let me talk Moonfall, so I'm like, you know what, bro? I'm bouncing.
So last but not least, if you are going to be in Salt Lake City or in Utah on July 1st, come to the Post Theater. And yes. Watch 3 excellent detective movies with us. And
I'm so jealous of the people that are going to be there.
Yeah,
it's going to be fun. We'll tell you all about it, Mark. So yeah.
Yeah, but I want to be there. Whatever. Whatever.
All right. Well, let's give some deserving awards to these fine films.
Yeah.
All right, John, your favorite title.
I'm going to have to say Moonfall because that's where the moon falls.
Like, oh yeah,
to the ground, right down to the ground.
Noun verb.
Yeah, and you guys are going to say your titles, but – oh, actually, say your titles, and then I have complaints about the other titles.
So I also like – well, subject verb. I also like subject verb. I like Savannah Smiles.
Huh.
Okay.
I like Moonfall.
Moonfall.
It sounds like it's going to be a cool movie, and you would be very wrong thinking that.
If you knew nothing about it, you'd be like, oh, is this like the latest James Bond? No, this is about the moon falling and hitting the earth. Literally, that's what this movie is.
You know, initially, when they started talking about Moonfall, before I knew Roland Emmerich was a part of this and bad feelings were associated with that, when I heard Moonfall and I heard sci-fi, I thought about Duncan Jones's Moon. And I'm like, oh, is it going to be something in that vein? Because if so, yes.
Moon's and excellent. No.
It's great.
Moon is very good.
Listen to us discuss Moon, I think, on podcast 6 or sometime.
Yeah, you guys covered it. And if y'all want to watch a real good sci-fi movie that has to do with the moon, just watch Moon. Forget the Moonfall.
Yeah, Moon is great. Moon is great. Okay, I do have to bring up – I did not pick In the Mood for Love for my favorite title because, like the poster, is that a good title for In the Mood for Love? Isn't that the opposite of what the title should be?
Very much so. Yeah, it's very confusing.
Yeah, totally. And also Savannah Smiles, because what? Does she just smile like at the end of the movie?
She smiles a lot. She smiles a lot.
She smiles a lot.
But not for the first third of the movie.
When she smiles.
There's a lot of pouting.
When she smiles, John, you loser, that's when you just won.
For one third of that movie, that title's a lie.
That's true.
Two thirds isn't bad. So, all right. Okay. Well, in the mood for love, there's 100% of the movie does not have love.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But totally. At least half of Moonfall involves the moon falling, so that's pretty good. Okay. All right. Best movie poster, Mark.
The best movie poster for me was In the Mood for Love. I mean, it's a big giant lie.
Yeah.
But the poster looks great.
Yeah. John, yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. In the Mood for Love, but it never happens.
It never does.
So
it never
does. It's like with reservations and with complaint, but it's a great poster. It's sexy and good.
So I actually like the poster for Moonfall, and I was kind of I'm like, okay, I think I can handle a movie about the moon hitting the Earth. I think I can deal with that, and I think the poster is pretty great.
I don't mind the poster. It's almost like a moon eclipse that's mostly the poster, kind of.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk taglines. I'll have you go first, John, with your real one and your alternates.
My real favorite tagline is, in 2022, humanity will face the dark side of the moon, which is, you know,
nanobots.
It's great, you know, because it's nanobots, and it's like oh my gosh, are they going to face the power of Pink Floyd or whatever? But no, it's just like, it's the moon has a dark side. The moon is pissed. It's like Darth Vader. Okay, so Savannah Smiles' tagline: the most expensive babysitting gig in Utah's political history. In the Mood for Love tag: they'll never stoop to the level of their deceitful spouses. ... Never stoop to happiness.
Oh.
It got a little real there.
Yeah, it did.
The Moonfall tag: what? Hot hail? Run for your lives! It's Unicron!
Oh, that's really good. What do you got, Mark?
Initially, I thought I was going to go with, in 2022, humanity will face the dark side of the moon. But I found the tagline for In the Mood for Love, and I really dig it. It is, feel the heat, keep the feeling burning, let the sensation explode. And even in the tagline, it's a freaking lie. Mm. Everything, the entire marketing ploy for this movie just lies upon lies.
It's like the marketing director, he didn't see the movie all weekend, and he didn't see the movie. He's like, I'm just going to fake my way through this.
I know it's about two people falling in love.
So is the entire movie is like the slice of cake from The Matrix 2, but then he never makes it to the bathroom. Yeah. So anyway, that's not that's a poor analogy.
Alternate taglines. Savannah Smiles: annoying and slightly likable kid gets two morons sent to jail. In the Mood for Love: love has nothing to do with anything that happens here. Moonfall: we don't know how to science, but explosions, yeah, boy. That's pretty much all I got.
Okay. I like it. Because I think what we don't see in Savannah Smiles is that Savannah sparks love between Alvy and Boots. So I went with, and love will never be the same.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm.
Right.
So Alvy from, and Boot love.
Yeah. So from Savannah Smiles, Peter Graves' triumphant return. In the Mood for Love: when was the last time you checked your ties, gentlemen? And Moonfall: you're the laughingstock of your community. You're being evicted. Your marriage is failing. Your kid's in prison. Your mom has Alzheimer's. You're moving to New Jersey. And now guess what's going on with the moon?
Oh, that's great.
What, all that fit in one poster, though?
All right. Best opening credits, John.
Opening credits: In the Mood for Love, Red, with the Chinese titles.
Yeah. Mark, what do you got?
The exact same thing for the exact same reason. Yeah. It kind of sets the mood.
Yeah, for love.
All right, hat trick for your opening credits: In the Mood for Love. All right, best titular line, Mark.
This one, I couldn't make up my mind, guys. I'm sorry. Like, I couldn't. I want to hear what you guys have.
So I liked when he said, the moon falling now onto Earth. Now, but go ahead, John. What do you have?
Okay, my titular line is when it shows like the Dowager, like in her horse-drawn carriage in Moonfall, and they're heading to Colorado, and she's like, oh, you know, and she goes, oh, driver, please hurry. I feel we shan't make it to Colorado by Moonfall.
Okay, so anyway, you may have heard this before, but when Savannah smiles, I hear somebody saying, hey, loser, you just won.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, that's good.
All right, John, technology.
Okay, technology. It's definitely the Bootsy's camo car boat.
Oh man, that's what I chose. That's what I chose.
Yeah. Honorable mention to the binoculars the cops use in Savannah Smiles that seem to penetrate the walls of the cabin to observe, Alvy and Savannah hugging.
Yeah. All right, Mark, what's your favorite technology?
So, I didn't even think about the camo car boat because I knew everybody was going to choose that one. So I'm actually torn between the proto-human space tech that fixes things within 2 seconds and the rice cooker.
Oh, yeah.
Which rice cooker?
The one that Mrs. Chen brought back from Japan. Her husband bought her for.
Everybody's in love with this, and like everybody immediately wants to make rice on this thing.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, very good. Okay, well, Mark, what is your favorite name from these films?
Oh, did we get your favorite tech?
I just agreed with John.
Oh, okay, yeah, the camo car.
Yeah,
my favorite name, the character's name in all three movies has got to be Boots.
Boots is pretty good, yeah. John, what do you got?
I got to say Casey's cat, Fuzz Aldrin.
Oh, I forgot about Fuzz Aldrin.
Fuzz Aldrin's my winner, too. I have an honorable mention for Lieutenant Savage from Savannah Smiles.
Yeah, he's cool.
Someone's just like, okay, this is a movie about an adorable kid, but if I get to choose my own name, I'm Lieutenant Savage. So, all right. Well, what's your favorite food then, John?
Okay, it's when Bootsy made he made pork chops, first of all, but with the pork chops, the mashed potatoes with cream and butter.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was the best Savannah ever had. Yeah.
Well, what about you, Mark?
I would have said that, but you know what? Those noodles that Mrs. Chan kept ordering, I got to know what that's all about. Like, I just have to. There's nothing like a good noodle.
Sexual repression noodles?
Yeah.
Okay. Especially well, I went with those. Pastrami madness. I don't know what it is. But I want to eat that.
That's true. The Alzheimer's lady kept talking about it, right?
Yeah.
No. That's where Dr. Funhouse or whatever his name is was working, right?
I can't remember. It's just like something on a menu somewhere. And so here's what
she pulled
I picture.
Up on a drive-thru.
Speaking of Provo, Utah, there was a place called Stan's that had a pastrami Swiss bacon burger.
Wow.
And it was delightful.
That's a heart attack.
Yeah. Okay, what's your favorite outfit then, Mark?
Well, I would have said Alvy's red bandana, but you know what? Everything Mrs. Chan wore, what do they call those? Or the Chi Pao?
Chi Pao is what they call it, or Chi Pa is what they call it in Mandarin. I don't know what they call it in Cantonese.
I think I've heard it called like a Chang Sam or something like that. Anyway, those dresses, like, oh my God. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, I'm picking one of them. I have a specific
one. Right. I think this question, you should have phrased it that way. Which of Mrs. Chan's dresses is the best outfit?
Oh, man. I don't know. The red one.
Yeah. The initial red one. That's really good. Yeah, I'm going with the white dress with what looks like black, dark purple flowers all over the white dress.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So she has one that's got these wavy lines, these vertical wavy lines. That's pretty great. But I'm going to go with the one where it's like the floral one with a really bright green amongst like the blue and the red.
Yeah.
That one was really nice. Yeah.
The wavy one, is that the kind of gray silver one?
No, I think
it was. No, was it?
No, it wasn't. No.
I was thinking of wavy. I almost picked a wavy dark silver. Yeah.
That one had waves. I thought it had waves.
Yeah.
Yeah. She had
50 dresses.
She had 50 dresses.
Yeah, she did.
Her husband shops for her to make up for, you know, his guilt. So, all right, well, who's the best alien in this film, John?
I guess I have to go with the AI swarm.
Yeah. Well, I'm going with Ping, even though he's Chinese in China, but...
he's unusual to everybody, right?
Yeah. What do you got, Mark?
I actually have Mr. Chow and Mrs. Chan's significant others because we never see them. Mm. And yeah. I think the reason we never see them is because they're obviously aliens and they need to skedaddle because they've been outed, which possibly means that Mrs. Chan's child at the end is half alien.
Mm.
Which is why Chow has to keep the secret and yell into a tree.
And why the moon collides with the Earth 50 years later.
Yeah, it all started in 1960 Hong Kong.
All right. Mark, your favorite special effects?
As horrible as it is, it's the improbable flight of the Endeavor and his escape from the impossible tidal wave.
Oh, that's what I chose. I put shuttle right, bursting cool. forth from vertical tsunami.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, John. Okay.
Honorable mention to when the two people on ground control run to the chopper and they just bound.
Oh, yeah.
They largely bounce to the chopper. And then I guess they. Well, I'll get to that.
Okay, they fly right into the tidal wave instead of a
wave. Yeah. The chopper pilot's like, ugh. Will you guys hurry up and bounce out here? Anyway.
You made me wait. I hate you guys. I'm going to kill us all.
Yeah. No, the winner, my special effects winner, is when Savannah somehow, like, judo flipped Bootsy over.
Oh yeah. God. There's a serious weight differential there.
Yeah, I don't know how she didn't get crushed.
Yeah, she weighs her like 300 pounds.
Yeah.
All right. So your favorite location, John?
Okay, my favorite location is the changing area just underneath the moon, where if you stand under it, you can jump 50 feet in the air.
Nice, yeah.
Well, that's pretty good. What about you, Mark?
The Red Curtain Hotel building, apartment complex, whatever it was, where Mr. Chow is waiting for Mrs. Chan to come meet with him.
Oh, that red hallway, ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just striking. I loved it.
Honorable mention to Bridalville Falls, but I'm I kind of generalized it a little more. Maybe I'll be more specific in the future, but I just put 1960s Hong Kong. Seems pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
All right, your favorite song, Mark.
Okay, so In the Mood for Love had the best music, hands down, but mm-hmm. doesn't have any songs, and neither does Moonfall. So by default, I have to pick something from Savannah Smiles, which was hard. So I had to go with My White Knight.
By Darlene?
Because of these lines. It starts off with small girl's dream of a white knight on a steed. But too many years, too many beers, this sweet young flower has gone to seed. That's just the opening to this song. And the chorus is, if my white knight don't come get here soon, it's going to be too late because I got truckers, cowboys, ropers, right? Truckers, cowboys, ropers waiting at my gate. Like, this song is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
And it's your favorite.
Of the songs in that movie. Yeah.
Well, John, what's your favorite song?
Okay, well, I'm surprised, Mark, you didn't just pick Africa by Toto. That's a song.
Oh, my God. It's true. I should have. We spent like an hour saying how much I love this song, and I chose My White Knight. Oh, my God. I should be ashamed of myself.
I'm picking Africa by Toto, but my runner-up is actually a song from In the Mood for Love, which is just the song Perhaps, Perhaps, Perhaps in Spanish.
Oh yeah. That's so true.
Yeah. Which I guess
so true.
Was a 1962. I think Nat King Cole sang that in Spanish in the
60s. You're right.
Yeah, so it was right. It was fun to hear. I'm mostly familiar with the Cake version, of course, so it's interesting to hear.
Oh my God, I can't believe I missed both of those.
Yeah.
Well,
I hate myself.
The you're really going to hate yourself because the one you're forgetting about is another dusty road, another road of misery.
No. No, no.
From Savannah Smiles, the closing credits.
That was a Smokey and the Bandit wannabe, and like no, it just
actually the band was called Mountain Smoke. Mountain Smokey and the Bandit. Okay, John, your favorite guest star.
Peter Graves.
Oh my gosh, that's the wrong answer. All right, Mark, who's your favorite guest star?
It would have been Peter Graves, but since John already said it, I will say Charles de Gaulle.
Oh my gosh, it's Pat Morita. I don't know what.
Yeah, sure. Pat Morita is okay.
Yeah.
Wait, who's Charles de Gaulle? The president of France?
Yes, he showed up at the end of In the Mood for Love when he goes to Cambodia.
Oh, yeah.
There's footage of him in Cambodia going through Cambodia saying, this will soon be ours.
Hmm.
Oh.
All right. All right, then. All right, Mark, who's your favorite external recurring character? This is a tough one.
So I tried going through all the movies, and I'm surprised that y'all haven't seen like Airplane or Karate Kid. I thought it was gonna be easy. I couldn't find one, man.
I found one. Did you, John?
I did find one. First of all, my honorable mention is because we just barely watched Big, and so I kind of have this abstract honorable mention, which is Calling Parents and They Think It's a Kidnapping when it's not. That happens to Amanda Smiles and Big. But no, an actual person is the actor, Fran Ryan, who, and Katie pointed this out to me. I didn't even need IMDb. I was watching this with Katie, and she's like, oh, hey, that's Fran Ryan. She is Adrian's nurse in Rocky 2.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Lucy in Big Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
And who is she? Wow. Then she's in Savannah Smiles?
Oh, she's in Savannah Smiles. She plays.
In the very beginning. She starts shooting the guys.
Farmer Wilma. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. Okay. So I'm glad because I have a different one. First of all, my honorable mention is Taking Blues for both Quadrophenia and Moonfall.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm going to go with John Fiedler, who's the store clerk in Savannah Smiles and the judge in True Grit.
Whoa. Wow.
Really?
Cut True Grit. Wow. That's forever ago.
Yeah. Wow. All right, then. Okay. Internal recurring character. I'm going to start because it's Broken Marriages, all three. So.
Oh, that's really good, all three.
Go ahead, John. I forget that you guys go abstract with this.
Sorry.
We can do, yeah. You can do whatever rules you want, Mark. Yeah. Okay, my internal recurring character is Moo in Titles because we have In the Moo for Love and also Moofall.
Moofall, okay. All right. Mark, you have anything?
I didn't have anything because I was looking for actual characters, and I'm like, this is insane. I'm never going to find one.
You got to think outside the box. Break the rules, man. Shake things up.
Yeah. Nuke the moon.
Nuke the moon.
Oh, man. That's going to be.
You got to nuke something.
That's going to be a new like calling phrase for me. Nuke the moon. Okay. What's your favorite death then, Mark?
Dr. Hausman's death, because he's the only one with an actual consequential death.
Mm.
Like, yeah, because he becomes the moon.
He becomes the moon. He becomes the man on the moon.
Well, what about you, John?
Okay, well, I'm going to have to go with Barkus, the astronaut at the very beginning, because it was pretty much anything to get out of Brian singing and dancing to Africa.
Okay, well, when Boots and Alvy are robbing the store, they throw their produce at Piglet. And they hit him right in the head with a cantaloupe. And I know he opens his eyes back up, but the damage is done and he's dead.
He's not dead.
Yeah.
He's
death by a cantaloupe to the head.
He succumbed to his wounds like 3 days later.
Yeah. All right. Mark, who is your favorite villain or rake?
Social norms in China.
Because
that's what made them so miserable, especially Mrs. Chow.
Mm. Yeah, that's good.
Honorable mention, go to Savannah's parents.
Oh, man. Yeah, they're pretty bad. John, what do you think?
That was like my pick. I put Prude Pride. and also honorable mentions to the – what's his name? Was it Ping, who's the bald co-worker who specifically is like leching on people by leaving his hat places? and of course, Savannah's dad is an honorable mention because – he like kind of wanted his daughter to be kidnapped. He's like, no, we have to make this scandalous. Here, take this money. I have to be a villain. And then also the moon.
The moon. So my honorable mention is Toto enraging the moon. but I'm my villain is Savannah's father, who I think like when she got kidnapped, he was like, now don't be too hasty. She might show up in a few weeks.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Yeah. All right. Well, who's the hero of these films, John?
Okay. Well, Father O'Hara or Hannigan, Mr. Miyagi.
Father O'Hara is the correct answer.
Yeah. Come on.
Also the moon. Also the moon. Because the moon also is a hero.
A villain and a hero.
Yeah.
Mark, what's your answer? Did you choose Father O'Hara?
Oh, hell yeah. Because he puts himself in danger to save Alvy. But I also went with Ping because he's the only one who tells Mr. Chow what's really happening.
That's true. Okay, well, very good. Now let's do movie goofs. Mark.
All of the flawed science in Moonfall. Like,
what?
All of it. Yeah, like, the entire thing is a goof.
What?
I didn't see, like, any actual, like, film goofs. I didn't see any.
So, you're from Texas. In the beginning of Savannah Smiles, the Texas flag is flying upside down at the prison.
I didn't even see that.
Because the people in Utah are like, is this the right way up? I don't know.
So, it was red, white, blue? I just remember seeing the Lone Star, and I'm like, oh, that's a Texas flag. I didn't notice that it was upside down.
Upside down. Also, it was definitely, like, it was Utah mountains in the background. And that's anyway.
Yeah, well, it's clearly not Texas.
Clearly not Texas, yeah. John, what do you got? You got anything better?
I have several things. I don't know if they're better than that.
They're better.
All right, let's hear them.
Okay, first of all, I already mentioned this, but I don't believe in the Africa popularity of 2011 in the flashback. I've already stated my case there. Okay, but also, am I to believe that Bootsy and Alvy just magically transported from Bridalville Falls to Cotton Bottom in like the next scene? It's like, we all know that Bridalville Falls is not next to the Cotton Bottom. So
no, it's like an hour and a half away at least.
Yeah, it's like totally that. So that's wrong. Yes. And also, the Savannah's kidnapping was covered by Channel 9 News. There is no Channel 9 News in Utah. And
But I mean,
John, you're really digging deep on this.
Yeah, you got to give Hollywood.
We're putting people in their place.
Mark, why didn't you get these things? I blame you.
There's a Channel 9 where I grew up.
Okay, now here's the big thing. When Mrs. Chan and Mr. Chow like first eat together and they have those steaks, I don't know who dropped the ball on this, but they're in Hong Kong.
Oh, I know.
And they didn't give them chopsticks to eat.
Yeah, forks and knives, yeah.
They had forks and knives eating that steak, and they should have been picking up that steak with chopsticks, at least as far as the way I see the world.
The whole steak.
Yeah, just picking up the whole steak with chopsticks. Yeah.
No.
They should have. They should have. They should have. There's no Channel 9 News, and they warp between all the plates. This is how I do goofs.
All right. Well,
sometimes the goofs are my own.
But in their defense, they had hot mustard.
No, very good.
So that made up for the no chopsticks.
Well, John, what's the funniest moment from these films?
Okay, weirdly, not a lot of funny moments, I would say.
No, I know.
I've had a lot of fun with you guys, but I think in Savannah Smiles when they tried to hold up the place and then they shoot the gun and it shoots the tire of the car they're driving.
Yeah. All right, Mark, what have you got?
Like John said, there's not a lot of funny. So the things I found funny were not really ha-ha funny. Well, not really. Well, when they used Savannah as a human shield, that was kind of it's dark humor, but it was kind of funny. And also the never-ending Mahjong game, it's only 8 rounds. Don't worry. It'll be over soon. And then she has to spend the night. I thought that was kind of hilarious funny, but like, yeah, it's kind of humorous.
It's like something you laugh about like years later. Like, oh, you know, you tell your friends, if you're willing to tell your friends that sordid story.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I laughed out loud at the end of Moonfall when they made it clear that they were setting up a sequel. but then also in Moonfall, when they're driving away from the moon, it's like outrunning a nuclear bomb, right? But this time they're driving away from the moon.
Like, we outran the moon.
Yeah, they're driving away from it, and the stepfather says he says something stupid like, it's rock and roll time, and he switches the knob from economy mode to sport mode.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Which I think turned the car into a rocket ship or something. I don't know. So, anyway. Well, I thought it was funny. Okay, what's your key of D minor moment, John? What made you weep instantly?
I think probably just the beginning thing where she goes, my husband has this tie and my wife has the same bag. Yeah. And then she says, I thought I was the only one who knew.
Oh.
Yeah.
What about you, Mark?
Same movie, but at the opposite end, which at the very end, Mr. Chow's realization while in Cambodia that happiness will forever elude him. It's kind of a gut punch at the end.
So same movie, just Mrs. Chan arriving too late, getting to the hotel, and he's already left for his flight.
That was rough.
It's rough.
All right. What about your favorite what the heck moment, Mark?
Oh, my God. Pretty much everything in Moonfall. Like, none of it. You know, okay, so the most egregious thing happens early on when the director of NASA says, I'm out. I'm done with this. Here is the security clearance key. You're the director now, because that's the way it works in the world. You have no experience in directing NASA. You have no idea what's going on, but you're going to be the guy now.
Like, slip this card I gave you into that slot, and the space shuttle will launch.
From that moment on, like even before then, everything just got so stupid. But that moment, like, it really, like, seriously, bro, like, oh my That's God, funny. This hurts. It hurts my brain. I hate it.
All right, what about you, John?
I kind of, I don't know if this is a what the heck moment so much, but it had those two mission control guys who stayed behind. Like, they convinced those two guys to stay behind. We get to know those guys, and they kind of make that sacrifice. And then, I don't know, I kind of was like, what? You know, they died because they bound out to the Hulk, and they just die. They just die. And I'm like, those guys didn't have to die. I mean,
yeah,
they I don't know. Maybe since I'm getting so worked up over those guys, maybe it means I was more invested in their characters and so them dying actually brought it out, and maybe the movie is doing something good. But also, I'm just kind of like, they didn't have to die. Just make them not die.
I just can't get over the helicopter headed straight to the tidal wave.
Like, all right, folks, we can turn left into the wave, or we can turn right away from it.
Like, you guys hurry and launch the shuttle, because you might get wild Jim Barnes as your pilot. He's the last one left on the tarmac. You don't want to get in that guy's chopper.
You can hear him screaming. The best way is through, bro.
Okay, so for me, I was a little shocked in Savannah Smiles when I think Alvy said, I think we've got a hot kid in the back of the car. And I thought, excuse me? You can't be talking about a little girl like that. She's not hot. Anyway, but what I'm going with is that the ice cream shack at Brattleville Falls was just giving away free puppies.
Okay, that's
and that
a good
just
one.
That just made no sense. Okay, all right. What is your favorite quote, Mark?
It's actually a toss up between what does it mean to miss the rains down in Africa? Mm-hmm. We talked that to death, but I think what I really like is when Mr. Chow is telling Ping about, you know, how people used to hide secrets, and he says they went up a mountain, found a tree, carved a hole in it, and whispered the secret to the hole. Then they covered it with mud to leave the secret there forever. I really like that.
Oh, what about you, John?
I didn't quite get the whole quote down, but it was something like, I just realized I didn't finish writing this down, but when Mrs. Chan says, it's when before you get married, you can do all these great things, but once you're married, doing well for yourself isn't good enough. Which was right. Because she was doing well. She had this great job. She had all this stuff, but that wasn't good enough for what they had together. Yeah.
Is it the same job? Because her job is just, I think her entire job is just helping her boss manage his affairs,
his marital affairs.
His
mistresses. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. Funny.
So my favorite quote, and this isn't going to be a verbatim because I can't find this on the internet, but it's from Savannah Smiles, and I think it's Boots that says, "That's our sister's kid. She's always falling out of the car."
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I just thought, that's wonderful. So, all right.
The cop did nothing about that.
He's like, always falling out of the car? Well, that makes sense, kids. All right, your favorite scene, John.
I think it's the scene, I think it might be the second role play scene in The Mood for Love, when Mrs. Chan is kind of looking at the camera and we see the back of the guy's head, and she says, do you have a mistress? And he says no. And it's like, be honest. And he's like, okay, fine. And then she breaks down. And then it's revealed that it's a role play because you think that was her actual confrontation, but it was just the practice confrontation. Yeah, mm-hmm. That was my favorite scene.
Well, she initially slaps him, right?
Yeah.
Well, like, and she kind of slaps him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and I think he says something like, that wasn't hard enough.
It wasn't slap. Hard enough, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that threw me off at first because I thought, like, oh, this guy's a dweeb too. But then it was revealed that they're role playing.
Yeah. Wow. So is that your favorite scene, Mark?
No, same movie. But my favorite scene, though, was Mrs. Chan's desperate indecision whether she should go see Mr. Chow at the Red Curtain place, where she goes up the stairs and comes down and goes up. Like, she just, there's this absolute desperate indecision that she has about her, and then she finally goes to see him. But there's something about that scene, like, you know, you can feel that desperation inside her, like, you know, hanging with a guy makes her happy, but she can't do that because what would people say? And what if she falls in love? And what if she? There's just so much in that one scene that I really liked. It's pretty heavy.
So I wish I could add to our palette here, but I chose the same scene as John, the practicing, the role playing scene.
Right.
That's pretty good. Although I switched it halfway through the awards. I originally had Alvy getting gunned down in front of Savannah at the end of the film. Cause so I'll be honest, right? Like when at the end of Savannah Smiles, like it, I got a little bit choked up. So, yeah. Anyway, so your favorite actor, and I'm just going to start cause, we may have some repeats here and I want to be first. So I'm going to say Maggie Cheung, who plays Mrs. Chan.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And John, go ahead.
I picked Tony Leung, who plays, you know, the other guy. And in the Mood for Love, of course.
Mr. Chow.
I think he's Mr. Chow. He's super good. But honorable mention to, I couldn't find her name, but in Savannah Smiles, the girl working the stand who says, "Do you want a puppy?"
she's great.
Yeah.
All right, what about you, Mark?
Honestly, it's between Tony Leung and Maggie Cheung. And I went with Maggie Cheung because of how she portrayed a woman trapped in a patriarchal society that values tradition and how values the male wants and needs over a woman's happiness. Like, that, all of that was encapsulated in her acting, and I think she did such a beautiful job with that.
Yeah, she's great.
She was really phenomenal. I think I went with Tony Leung just because I feel like Maggie Cheung kind of got a little bit more freedom to break more. Like, Tony Leung was just on the verge of it, you know? Like, it was just behind him. It was just barely behind his eyes, you know? And he was kind of – it was like holding the emotion in, which might be an easy way to say. It's like, oh, yeah, he didn't do very much, so I liked it more. But, yeah, that's just kind of what I was thinking.
All right. Well, do you guys have any unanswered questions? Bob, I already asked both of mine.
Yeah, we covered the ones – well, except for, like, if proto-humans were so smart building moons and all that, why did they build an AI that ended up killing them? Like, you would think that, I mean, they were obviously crazy smart.
Yeah. Is that
they built farms inside the moon. Like,
that was cool. Wasn't it?
Incredibly smart.
Yeah.
So like, you would think that they would put safeguards in the AI they're building. Like, none of it made sense to me.
So I feel like science fiction continues to tell us again and again that our inevitable future is that we just get so smart, we get to the point that we build something that destroys us.
See, here's what the proto-humans didn't have. They didn't have James Cameron bringing us Terminator 1 and Terminator 2 to warn us about that kind of thing. Yeah.
I hear you. But you know what? And I do believe that we're going to get so smart that we'll create something that kills us. I mean, we have nukes.
Yeah.
And that could happen any second now, especially right now. But those are like, they're not intelligent creations that will attack us.
Yeah.
They are creations of destruction that we'll use against ourselves.
That makes me feel better.
Yeah, well, the moon tells Night Owl that they had already worked, proto-humans have worked past the conflicts of the past. They worked past wars and all that. So they were a very peaceful people. So like I just can't reconcile the fact that they were so smart to work through all these things that they didn't put safeguards in the AI they were building. Like, yeah. It doesn't make sense at all.
So of all these movies, right, of where like a technology turns on humans and people think of the Terminator or what's another, or iRobot, right? But of all the movies that I've seen, the one that was honestly the most terrifying to me was probably the Forbin Project.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say
like
that.
Like, how incredibly fast.
It's so great, Mark.
It happens. Like, they turn on this supercomputer, and within a minute, it has shut out humans from communication, and it's only communicating with other supercomputers, and it creates its own language, and it's just crazy. It just happens so fast.
I never heard of this.
It's pretty awesome.
It's great, yeah. I think it's called Colossus the Forbin Project.
The Forbin Project, yeah.
Yeah.
I need to see this.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a question. I'm sorry to ask this, but I'll go ahead and ask it. But the very end of Moonfall, the other moon intelligence says to Casey, okay, well, you're here now, so we better get started. And he says, get started on what? So what is the moon talking about itself with? For what?
Yeah, that's the sequel setup, right?
Yeah.
Evolution of humanity?
Is it another moon that's going to collide with this moon?
I assume they're building another moon. Yeah.
Yeah, like we have to build another moon because we have to. Oh, maybe. Yeah, I think that's it. It's like we got to build another moon and then send that moon off and then find a new Earth for people on Earth because people on Earth, you know. Yeah.
That tracks.
Because the Earth is just messed up.
Or even it's just could just be fixing the moon. It's pretty banged up.
Or fixing humanity. How to get them to move past warfare.
Yeah. It's like we need to get as peaceful as possible so that we can build an AI that will destroy us. That's our next. Okay, I have written down Alvi truck thing, ? And I don't know what that means. So my question is, what did I mean by writing this down as my unanswered question, Alvi truck thing?
Where can you buy one?
Oh, no, where the flashbacks he was having about how the kids were leaving him behind.
Okay, yeah, that was my question. So, because he was having a flashback. So did Savannah change time itself where his flashback actually changed?
She's more powerful than Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, she has some kind of Scarlet Witch power that alters reality.
Oh, man.
Okay, well, that's a good enough answer for me.
Okay.
It's like her mutant power is manifest during the course of Savannah Smiles, yeah.
Okay. Well, all right here. So we're going to talk about the markiest stuff from these films. So the markiest scene, let's start with that. John, what is the markiest scene from these three films?
Markiest scene. From Savannah I'm going to have to say the in Moonfall when the hotel floods and they're just like, let's just go to the top floor.
All right, I'm going to go with taking your secrets to Angkor Wat and Frenching the Angkor Wat hole.
Oh, that's probably the best scene.
Yeah. Well, what about you, Mark?
I applaud you, sir. I applaud you. The exact same thing. Mr. Chow in Cambodia, burying his secret forever.
There you go. Okay, the markiest character. I'm going to start. It's Boots. It's definitely Boots.
Okay, I picked Harlan Dobbs, played by Peter Graves.
No, wrong movie. Not even close. I went with Mrs. Swen, the one who rented the apartment to Mrs. Chan, because she ain't no snitch.
Oh. Nice. Because
she knows what she's doing, and she doesn't snitch on her, but she does tell her, hey, you know what's going on? You're young. You're doing your thing, but you got to chill.
Yeah.
It's got to stop.
Seriously,
writing? It makes me sleep. It'll help me sleep better tonight knowing that you're not going to reveal what we talked about during this podcast to anyone.
I will not. I won't tell a soul.
Thank you.
So, like, I think Mrs. Chan, after that talk, she's like, oh my gosh, am I not supposed to be writing a kung fu book? So, all right. The Markiest movie. Mark, you don't get to answer, but it's going to be In the Mood for Love.
Markiest Mark?
Yeah, Mark.
In the Mood for Love, In the Mark for Love.
In the Mark for Love. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's time to rank these guys, and I changed my ranking.
Oh, you did?
I thought I knew what I was doing.
Oh, wow. All
I changed it around a little bit. Okay. So, let's see. I'll start, and then that'll... well, is that how we do it? How do we do it where the guest gets to reveal first?
Does Mark start and then it goes back to him?
You could be right, sure.
Yeah, okay.
I think by default you'll know our number ones, but I guess he'll get to say it first. So, Mark, your third favorite movie, the movie that you loved so much, but just not as much as the other two.
Savannah Smiles.
Yeah, I know. I loved it a lot, too. All right, John, what's your number three?
Okay, I was going to pick Savannah Smiles, but I went with Moonfall because even though I kind of liked Moonfall it was just all the garbage screenplay lines that just wasn't trying. It was just like I had to put it number three.
Yeah. I mean, did you see Savannah Smiles?
Yes.
Because we're talking about garbage screenplay lines.
Okay, yeah.
Here's a free puppy.
But so Savannah Smile, but that's true. The problem is the Moonfall was 4.5 hours long, right? And that's true. And it didn't need to be. There was so much unnecessary story that's supposed to tug at your heart, and I just didn't care, right?
Yeah, the stupid kid, do away with that.
Yeah. So Moonfall is also my number three. I don't know. So anyway, it was fine. It was fine. So my number two, and these are the ones I switched. So, my number two is going to be Savannah Smiles. I don't know, man. I really loved it. It's a bad movie, but I really loved it. So
yeah, have your thing. There's something about Savannah Smiles. I think it was written by Alfie, like the actor.
Was it really? You're pulling my leg.
No. I think he was the writer or director.
The actual character.
Yeah, maybe the character. No. Whoever played Alfie, I think it was written by him. No way. I kind of got the sense that it was just it had the here's a puppy thing, and it was pieced together, and it was kind of non-professional. But I kind of feel like at least they cared about it. And I didn't get that sense with Moonfall. I feel like just no one cares. It was just a commodity, you know. It's just like I had that feeling about it. So I'm going Savannah Smiles second.
All right. So Mark, you're number two, and then tell us what the best movie here was.
Yeah. My number two was Moonfall. Honestly, it was a toss-up between Moonfall and Savannah Smiles, but at least we had explosions in Moonfall.
There was an explosion in Savannah Smiles. The prison break explosion.
A couple more would have made the movie watchable. So Moonfall is my number two, and number one is In the Mood for Love, because that was an actual real cinematic movie, and it shows the, you know, people in despair that are dealing with a traumatic betrayal, and flirting with the possibility of finding love, only to know that you can't get there. It was a very, very good movie. I love the way it was filmed. It had kind of a Mad Men feel to it, almost. I love the texture of the film. I could smell the 60s. Everything about it was great. And the actors were just so fantastic. The
actors are super good. I really appreciate that. I kind of – In the Mood for Love was kind of exactly what I thought it would be, which is kind of a weird thing to say. And that's I'm not saying that as a negative thing, because it's like, okay, yeah, I'm glad I finally saw it. It's what I thought it was. It was this thing and these things happened and I felt this way about it. But I also kind of feel like it's a movie that will resonate more with me in the future. Like I'm going to like it more a month from now. Like it's one of those kind of things. Yeah, I feel that planted, you know?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
All right. Well done. So, Mark, I there was not a single one of these three movies that I didn't enjoy. I had a good time. So interesting choices. But now it's time to get serious. John, it's time to clean house, and I'm trying to remember where on earth that even comes from.
It's from an old David Letterman top 10 list, and it was this is how old it was. The first Iraq war, the top 10 ways we can finally get rid of Saddam Hussein or something. And number six, send in Charles Bronson to quote clean house.
Okay.
That's what I always think of when I think of Charles Bronson.
Okay. So I honestly can't even believe this category was chosen. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be a part of it, man. I love Charles Bronson movies.
We're doing a serious swing here because, what was the last podcast that we did before this one? What were the movies? I can't remember. It was with
the big movies. The
yeah, it was female directors, right? So, yeah. Although oddly, the female director movies were fairly
testosterone,
right? Testosterone filled, yeah.
But we are going all in hardcore on the testosterone here, and so the fans voted for Murphy's Law, which I'm so excited about. And this has been so much fun because I was pulling the posters and I was reading the taglines. Every poster for any Charles Bronson movie is so good, and every tagline just makes me want to watch the movie right now. So Murphy's Law. In fact, I pulled this tagline up right now. I mean, you've seen it, right, Mark? I haven't seen.
Oh yes, I have seen it. So my grandfather was a giant Charles Bronson fan, and it's fairly inappropriate that I saw the movies with him, because at the ripe old age of 10, I was hearing people drop F-bombs and there was like all sorts of boobies on TV. But I mean, that was my grandfather. I loved watching movies with him, and because of him, I loved watching Charles Bronson movies, even though I fully recognize that they're ridiculous. Yeah. He was like 80 years old and still like shooting up gangs in New York and like being like a Snake Plissken sort of almost kind of character. He was like a 90 years old doing that. So like it should be stupid, but because Charles Bronson played it so well, like I loved the movies. I still do.
Man. So the tagline is, he's a cop, she's a thief, together they're running for their lives. And this poster just looks so good.
when you watch this movie, Roy, there's a line about where Charles Bronson says, do you know what Murphy's Law is? And the person he's talking to says, no. And the response to that, which I won't mention here, is hilarious. But he delivers it with such fierceness that it's kind of cool at the same time.
Does he just shoot him?
He just shoots him.
Almost verbally, he shoots his face. But you got to watch this. That line itself is just so awesome.
Oh my gosh! I feel like we have finally arrived at Bronson, Missouri. So it's my pick, and this is a movie that I've been meaning to watch for a really long time. In fact, I bought it several years ago, and there's a weird phenomenon I have with this this podcast. Where if there's a movie that I haven't seen but I want to, I will put it off thinking we're going to watch it for the podcast. And so I've put off watching this movie for several years. And to be honest, I didn't know he was the star. And so I'm happy that a cop movie was the fan choice, because I didn't want to go all in on Westerns because I like the idea of Charles Bronson as a cop. But I'm choosing Once Upon a Time in the West. Which didn't even make the poll, which kind of surprised me. Also, not making the poll was Great Escape didn't make the poll. The Magnificent Seven didn't make the poll, and neither did the Dirty Dozen, which makes me happy. Those are kind of ensemble films.
I can't believe you've never seen Once Upon a Time in the West.
Haven't seen it. I'm so excited, and it's supposed to be like the magnum opus of Sergio Leone, right? Am I saying?
Yes, that? It's so
Opus
good.
Magnum. Yeah.
What?
How have you never seen that movie, Roy?
Never seen it. Sorry.
That's weird.
So he's not just in it as an ensemble. He's the main guy, right? He plays harmonica.
Yeah.
I'm so looking forward to it.
Such a great movie. Such a great movie.
All right, Jonathan, hit us.
Okay, my pick is a movie that I don't know if anybody has seen, like in the world currently. Everyone who's seen it is dead now, maybe. But I have to see this movie, you guys. This is very important to me. I'm picking the one I voted for, which is Red Sun, which is, according to the poster, the first East meets West Western. And listen to this cast: Charles Bronson, Ursula Andress.
Oh, I know.
Tashira Mufune.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
And Alain Delon, the famous French actor who was in, if you ever saw Le Cercle Rouge, it's the coolest movie I've ever seen. And Alain Delon is the star of it. And so, yeah, listen to that cast. Anyway, it looks like it's going to be Shanghai Noon.
Man, I'm just looking at the trailer right now. And Charles Bronson, so awesome. Holy cow. So I'm really glad Murphy's Law won, because I was determined to pick Once Upon a Time in the West, and I knew you were going to pick Red Sun, and I'm glad we got one cop movie out of this.
Perfect.
But this is going to be great. Oh, I'm so excited. Okay.
I'm low-key hurt that neither of you chose Mr. Majestic.
Oh, man.
I am one of that, hurt. Sorry.
So that there's like 20 great looking Charles Bronson movies. So this I think this one's ripe for resurrection sometime in the future. We'll see. All right. So to recap, we are going to watch Murphy's Law. So in order, I guess we'll be watching Once Upon a Time in the West, Red Sun, and then Murphy's Law.
Nice. Yeah,
it's going to be great.
It's going to be great.
Okay, we don't have any – there was no poll for new categories because it's simply going to be our friend Richard Templeman who will be joining us for the very first time. But he will have community service. And this is interesting because we're going to have our podcast with you, Mark, with Charles Bronson. We'll have Richard Templeman with his three movies that he wants us to watch. And then it's the live event. And then we'll immediately come back and do Richard's community service. So – randomly chosen for Richard's community service is category number 32. It's called All in the Family, Writing, Directing Families. So I'm talking about movies by like the Coen brothers or the Hesses or the Russos, stuff like that.
Okay.
So it'd be like a fight. A directing family fight.
I'll definitely be voting for Speed Racer.
Okay.
I'm in. I've never seen it. I'll have to see it.
All right, Mark, you get to choose a category.
I'm going to go with movies where Sean Bean dies.
Nice.
Okay, what number is that so I can locate it rapidly?
That is number 6.
Yeah, that one's been on our list for a while. Oh, no.
What do you mean, oh, no?
Oh, no. You know what this means?
Means we have to move to resurrection categories or no, Loser Club?
Losers Club.
Oh,
possibly, unless Sean Bean movies wins, because right now we have 50s musicals, Into the Wild, and now movies where Sean Bean dies have all been nominated 3 times. And so if that category loses, then we will go into Losers Club, which is fine, That's fun. We haven't done that for a while.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Sean Bean won't die. not in this. How can you not want to watch a Sean Bean movie?
Where he dies.
Oh, it's every movie.
Okay. Very good. Okay. So I'm picking one kind of based on my limited knowledge of Richard. We kind of finagled doing the Jane Austen movies when we had Mickey on, and I thought that was kind of a lovely fit. And actually that turned out to be a really good podcast. So for Richard, who's kind of our Star Trek guy, but also seems to really be into musical theater, I'm going to go with category number 90. It's a new one, and it is 21st century musical movies. So musicals that have been released at the theater since the year 2001.
Okay. No, that's pretty good. So there's a really good chance that we'll be doing that one and then also 50s musicals from Losers Club.
Oh, how nice. How great would that be?
That'd be interesting. Yeah.
So I don't know who would get stuck with that. Who's on our schedule after Richard that would have to watch, that's going to have to end up with the Losers Club if that's what happens? It's Ammon.
Is it Ammon?
It's Ammon.
Okay. Yeah, right. That's fine with me.
Well, that's the business, folks.
Cool.
So let's see. Sorry, just administrationing. And, it's almost midnight, so I'm probably going to get at least 4 hours of sleep, so that's cool.
Sean Bean, folks.
All right. Well, hey, everybody, that is the podcast. Mark, it is so good to have you back. I love talking movies with you.
I love hanging with you guys. You guys are awesome.
It's great. Yeah.
These three were great.
Yeah, you too.
Charles Bronson's going to be so great.
It's going to be so awesome.
I can't wait to talk Charles Bronson with you.
Seriously, I'm going to go upstairs right now and just pump some iron because I need to get all Bronsoned out.
So we'll do special awards, but one of them has to have something to do with cleaning the most house.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, this is so much fun. Again, thanks, Mark. Thanks, you guys, for listening. If you made it this far, don't forget we got the live event coming up, and hope that we can see some of you there. And we're just going to open up the door and try and herd a bunch of University of Utah fans into the theater as well, or students. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. You guys have any closing remarks?
I want to talk to you guys forever more, but I gotta pee.
All right. Thanks for podcasting, you guys. Catch you later.
Bye, everybody.
You know what? These, my extras on these podcasts are the least new thing I do in my life.
I find them endearing.
Oh, okay.
Shoot. Man, I should have worked this out.
To say I'm in the moon for podcast.
What? Oh, okay. that's actually way more clever than I thought.
It's not even. It's combining so many things. Yeah. I'm in the moon for podcast smiles.
Ooh. I'm moon falling in love with this podcast.
All right. You're going to have to improvise. You ready?